InfoWars, tomorrow's news, today.
Maricopa County. You're saying that what's going to happen is we're going to find out the Chinese had a major heavy hand in rigging election? What's your take on the raid County, yesterday in Maricopa?
Yeah, it wasn't really a raid. It was a grand jury subpoena, but they grabbed the stuff. There will be some search warrants executed in the coming days based on my reporting. They're looking at, in Maricopa County, it's a very technical thing, just like it was in Georgia. Did you follow state law? Because if you didn't administer a federal election as it was supposed to be under state law, you can be charged federally. It's just about doing the right thing and following the law. But above that, not in Maricopa County, not in Fulton County, there is an extraordinary review going on by the CIA director, the FBI director, the director of national intelligence, so Tulsi Gabbard, John Ratcliffe, and Cash Patel. They have found a body of documents that I think will trouble all of us and probably will have a profound effect on the Senate debate over the Save America Act. A lot of senators are sitting up there saying, I don't know if I need to vote for this. I don't know what the politics is. Wait a second. When they find out that maybe voter identities in their state databases were penetrated by China and used in influence operations, that may change their mind. And so I think the debate in the Senate could be informed by what comes out in the next few weeks.
Oh, fascinating. Oh, that's so interesting.
That's John Solomon and Benny Johnson. Of course, you're like, wait a minute. We heard all this in 2020 and 2021. You heard specifically from General Flynn and Patrick Byrne and Mike Lindell and myself and Rudolph Giuliani the specifics, because we know how it works. The CIA and the Democrats, the deep state, had China create the computer chips, the codes, with the wireless access cell phone chips. Then they would claim they were made in Taiwan, and then they were shipped to Venezuela, and the three major voting machine companies were all really owned and run by a consortium of the Venezuelan government. And they helped steal elections in 60 other countries. This has been known. I had guests on 25 years ago talking about Sequoia and Smartmatic and Diebold, and then, of course, they would just change the names to new things. And then when this evidence was brought out 5 years ago, the judges wouldn't see it, and they would just default Rudolph Giuliani, default Mike Lindell, and say, nope, no evidence that you can even access these machines, even though they're wireless on record. I've seen hundreds of demonstrations where teenage hackers can just come in and break into any of these machines because they're wireless. And so, yeah, that's old news for all of you, but now the Justice Department does have active criminal investigations. They have raided already in Arizona and in Georgia. But how do you have the CIA investigating itself? Well, we got Tulsi Gabbard and others in there, so I have some faith. But this is just open and shut, folks. And, you know, you even hear Solomon being very, well, we're breaking this. And he's a great reporter, but you know, no sensationalism from him. Well, it is sensational. You know, if Martians land in Manhattan, it's going to be sensational. You can't just, well, maybe they're Martians, or maybe my pulse went up, you know, one beat a minute. We have to get pissed about this. Of course, what did you hear in great detail from us yesterday with our special guest? Everything you just heard about there. The specifics of the proof of how the Democrat deep state with China stole the 2020 election, and they plan to do it again. They're trying right now. The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is, and they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have God for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at TheAlexHomeStore.com.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want to stop tyranny? Well, so does he. Live from the InfoWars.com studios, it's Alex Jones.
Ago, one of my favorite directors and writers, I mean, he's just very talented, obviously, didn't need me to tell you that, Roger Avery was on Joe Rogan's show, and man, he really nailed how the Satanism works, why they really do it. You don't really hear anybody else other than me explain exactly why they do what they do, and how they tell you what they're going to do through Hollywood, and he's been in and around it. You know, he wrote things like Pulp Fiction. And you wonder, where's all this come from? That's real stuff, basically. But put into a composite. He's going to be joining us in the third hour today. I just could tell. I said, oh, he's got to be a listener. See if he'll come on. And boom, he is. So you talk about somebody that's on the inside. That's going to be big. Because Joe did a great job interviewing him. But I think I'm going to do a better job because I know more on that subject. So that Roger Avery coming up in the third hour. Look forward to that and all the new Epstein stuff that's come out. We haven't really been on Epstein that much the last 13 days because of World War IV that started. And I want to get into the updates on that, big developments there as well. But yesterday, we had longtime Trump confidant and very respected lawyer who's been heading up and quarterbacking a lot of the private investigations really for Trump into the theft of 2020 and the ongoing attempts since then. And you've seen the Democrats winning most of these special elections and then just the same evidence of exact same fraud over the top each time. We had Peter Tichtin on yesterday. What an important interview. It's up on InfoWars.com. It's up on X. It's up on Rumble. Get it. Share it. Yes, you know all about this, but the general public still doesn't get it. And they caught them in just this last primary. Just a few days ago, last week, they caught them in San Antonio with the same name voting over and over again with thousands and thousands of names. Remember, this came out in Michigan in 2020, and since then, they'll have one person might vote 5,000 times. They're even lazy about it. They just create new voter IDs off the person's name and social security number. Same thing in Wisconsin. What is it? They've got like 4.5 million. You can pull it up. 4.5 million registered voters and now 7 million votes. And it's approaching soon. There'll be more votes in Wisconsin than there are people, period. Come on. But how does it work? You know, we look at ballot stuffing. We look at dead people voting. We look at mules and that's even with the computers. There was such a landslide for Republicans of 10, 15, 20 points, depending on the area, that they have to then wait because they can't keep running the machines after election day. And then that's why Pelosi said, oh, he will lose in 2020. She said, no matter what. And then you see, they close the election that night and then bloop, magically the numbers go straight up, which is impossible in an organic voting graph. It's always curve, incremental, not bloop. And you have those, you know, famous graphs in all the places they stole, and down to each county, same thing. Oh, we're not voting anymore. Oh, we closed early. Oh, the power's off. Oh, broken water main. But then you see them put stuff over the windows. Then you get the surveillance footage inside, and it's just them running the same stacks of ballots all for Biden over and over again. And wiping their foreheads and even writing notes and text messages later saying, God, making sure he won was sure hard. We went 10 hours straight. My fingers are bleeding. And you know, they caught the Georgia lady that won the lawsuit against Giuliani. She's just laughing about it and saying, oh, I'm here today. You know, I hadn't come in a month, but I'm here now to get my job done. And you know what that is. So it goes on and on and on. But China has hacked into the different state DMVs so that it can get the names and the addresses, and then off that they create fake voter IDs, and to cross-reference it, they have Zuckerberg goes out, and there's a national consortium run by the Democrats that most state governments, a bunch of states have passed laws now to reverse it. We had to get that lawyer on. What's his name? He did a really good job exposing this. Last year we had him on. I'll remember it in a minute. But they set up in the 90s this national consortium that sounds like a government name, and almost all the states' legislatures then would pass a law that it's over the voter database, but it's a private Democrat operation, and then it sells it to Zuckerberg. He goes and buys other databases. What was it? 400-something million, remember that? In the year before 2020. And then they integrate all those together, and that's how Biden got 8 million more votes than Trump, and more votes than Barack Obama got. By the way, Barack Obama didn't even steal the election. He was popular. That's just a fact. So we know what they've done. And now John Solomon, Fox reporter, and obviously has his own popular news site, very, very respected, great guy, we're probably going to pull a surprise for it, but he's now reporting what we reported back in 2020, 2021. Communist China breaking into the databases, stealing it, so they could have the election stolen. And just in San Antonio, last week, candidates are allowed to demand the voter database of who voted for them. They gave them the database, and it was a huge database with thousands and thousands of people in Bexar County voting repeatedly. And the same system where it's the same name, different voter ID, just made up. Oh, and of course, the mistakes are all for the Democrats. Just like, oh, I've been sitting here 7 hours, 8 hours to drop off this USPS delivery 18-wheeler. You get bored. They have postal inspector powers. Let me see what's in here, because this is weird that we're waiting with them, and all these other trucks with them, to deliver things to this warehouse. And you open up the boxes, and it's all for Joe Biden. And you're shipping it in from outside of state days before the election. So you call the county clerk, you call elections officials, and then the FBI comes and threatens you to shut up. Remember that in Pennsylvania? And it happened to other states too. Gee, what am I delivering here? This is weird. I've been sitting here all day. Let me. And again, the crooks were so lazy. You'd think if you're getting 18-wheeler loads of fake ballots, you know, you'd think you'd have your crooks there to get it right when the truck pulls up. Nope, broad daylight. You just sit out there all day with your load until you're like, hey guys, what are you here to deliver? We don't know. This is weird. Well, let's see if we can contact somebody. Let's open this up and see who this is to. What the hell? Joe Biden ballots? Yeah, during the 2020 election, Wisconsin had 7.1 million registered voters, but only 4 million adults exist in the state. Even today, the total number of adults that exist in Wisconsin is around 4.73 million. Yeah, but the number I'm looking for is, it's incredible. And I love how the crew just pulls stuff up, because it sounds like I'm just making stuff up, because I just kind of fluidly say it. I'm not making things up. Now, about 1% of the time, my brain's not perfect. I'll get a factoid wrong. That's why I'm usually saying, hey, check this, check that, you know, just to keep my brain honest here. But the Tipton interview yesterday is so important. Please get it. In fact, yes, Ben, because I'm busy, obviously. Ask Ben to retweet this, or ask Lewis to repost this on X. It's there, but just, you'll repost and say this is absolute must-watch share if you don't want them to steal the election again. I mean, this is absolute do or die. And remember, I talked to two people that were at the White House 6 months ago. No, five months ago, whatever October was. And I don't know why they don't want to say their names, but it's since come out. One of them was Roger Stone. And this was during a whole week he was up there. He was up there on the Epstein stuff, trying to get Trump to, you know, get off the bandwagon of suppressing and just bring it out. But they were having briefings, and they're in there with the vice president, Susie Wiles, Tulsi Gabbard, all of them. And Trump would wander in and out and yell at people and say, I want this done now. And it was just absolutely, the Chinese hacked it. They already have the databases. They already have it all. They have how they did it. We had it back at the time. That's how we told the exact same story that's now been proven accurate, was when I say we, the Patriots, and how they did it and how they ran the actual theft digitally into the machines here in the U.S. out of Serbia by a Chinese company. Because they don't just sell the machines that they make in China and then fence them through Taiwan. They also have to do the hacking, but China doesn't want to originate in China, so they do it from Serbia. And I can tell you, good patriots in our government and out did hack into the Venezuela election and prove it was a fraud last year. They did deal with that facility in Serbia on election night. That's what the Democrats were sure they were going to win in 2024, and just, sorry, nothing seemed to work that day at those offices. And I heard some people fell down and hit their heads and things, too. So, and that's what's going to happen if we're going to beat the globalist, is Trump's going to have to take matters into his own hands. The problem is, as Tipton said, who's coordinating all of the response, is they're moving it around, and they've got a whole bunch of places to launch their attack now, where even if we send in paramilitary or whatever to, you know, tie everybody up for the night or whatever, and if anybody resists, you know, they fall down the stairs, or I guess they die in a car wreck. People find them later, you know, it's too bad they died in a car wreck, their neck's broken. But it doesn't matter, because they're going to have 10 different places where they can launch this the theft from. So this is a serious situation, ladies and gentlemen, and that's why it has to come out. So you wonder how Trump won and why magically 8 million voters didn't show up for Kamala Harris. It's because their command center got taken out. And that's the only reason. Now, they had enough mail-in ballots and general fraud. You know, it was quite a bit of theft, but their main attack, the machines, was taken away. Yeah, now the New York Times is reporting it. Unrestrained Chinese cyber hackers, who do you think that is, attackers, may have stolen data from almost every American. Oh, really? But remember, we're all liars. We're all crazy. We're all insane. Alex Jones, Mike Lindell, General Flynn. Yeah, put that back up. Now, Wired Magazine's reporting. Security News, this is even last year. China secretly and weirdly admits it hacked U.S. infrastructure. Yeah, no, it hacked the databases, and then Zuckerberg, what was it, 445 million? Guys, get the exact number. $400+ million to help the Democrats with their voter database. And of course, most of that's laundered. They didn't even need that to buy the databases. Database is 10, 20 million maximum. I've looked into it. I've had lawyers on about it that are experts. No, shoring up $400 million was paying the mules and the operatives and the local scammers. I mean, Zuckerberg is an absolute criminal. Now, he promises he's going to sit on the sideline for future elections and not steal anymore. And that's fine. You know, enemies that turn over to us, give up now, I say leave them alone. That's the best way to win a war. But I don't trust these people as far as I can throw them. And Peter Tichtin is seeing all the same signs again. So what an important interview. I mean, I got so much of the news to hit, but this is central. And I don't want to hear from people trying to demoralize Republicans. Oh, Trump's a warmonger and, you know, all the bad things he's doing, so I'm not going to vote. Hey, that's your right to do. The Republican candidates on average are night and day, light years better. No one can deny that than the psychotic, crazy, out of their minds, and more totally delusional and inept. So the Democrats have had all this power, but now they're handing it down to less and less capable people to even be good crooks, and that's why things are falling apart. So it is a mix of evil, corruption, and total ineptitude, and it's just absolutely no way. We need to vote for good Republican candidates. We need to replace rhinos. We need to replace neocons, and we're doing that. We are winning, and Trump has taken us so far. Now he's sliding sideways. And I know I address this all the time. It's just so important to not be emotional about this and to be a realist about these things. But, you know, for the average person that, you know, gets on a Trump train, they're not really deeply into politics or history. So I get you emotionally support Trump and you want instant change and the things don't go perfect. And so you get pissed and say, screw the whole deal. That is an immature worldview. If we didn't have Trump as a speed bump 8 years ago, 9 years ago, and if we didn't have him in now, we would be infinitely screwed. I'm going to say it again. Not just Lord Monckton, who's a very smart economist, but other major institutions have looked at if they actually cut carbon in half, like they said by 2035, it would kill at least 2 billion people just from the starvation. Because, you know, 3 or 4 billion are hand to mouth. And the ensuing civil unrest that comes out of that, in all the metrics, is guaranteed to trigger giant wars that'll kill even more. I mean, you're talking about World War Z. People don't have food. What happens? Cities burn. And I don't care if the cities are Japanese. I don't care if they're white or African, for that matter. Okay, when people really start starving to death, every culture breaks down. And a big group of people commit suicide, and the rest turn into warlords, or they work for warlords. There's anarchy doesn't usually last more than a week or so. And then things turn back to warlords, and then the whole process goes through that. I don't want to live under warlords. The globalists even have a model for that. If they talk about how they're going to have no more nation states, they're going to have city states, and then everything around it is kept at a subsistence, agrarian level, not even really having much electricity. You'll have a communal, like, screen in the middle of the town. You won't have electricity. You won't have medicine. You'll get, like, one pair of shoes a year. This has all been actuaried out. And you'll be like a museum piece, and they'll have these high-tech cities that are high-tech reservations that rule over us. And you're like, wait, that sounds like the movie Elysium. Or that sounds like the Hunger Games. Yeah, those are not instances of life imitating art. That's art imitating life in the futurist projections. The Hunger Games is literally what 1960s civilizational planners describe in the future. You have these gods of Mount Olympus that are these high-tech reservations, and then you've got a mainly depopulated Earth that's kept rural and kept agrarian, and we run around in loincloths like the Eloi, and they are the Morlocks. That goes back to the Time Machine and H.G. Wells. So, and of course, H.G. Wells was a big Fabian socialist and wrote a bunch of books that were nonfiction describing how they were going to build this world. They made a movie in the 30s, Things to Come, off his book from the 20s. And it's high production, even for today. and they fly around in B-2 bombers, dropping hydrogen bombs, this is before they had hydrogen bombs, they have theoretically, on all the major cities and countries that won't submit to world government. And he was also picking the idea up from Bertrand Russell, said maybe we should just have a nuclear war up front to get rid of the surplus population, and then out of that build a new world of peace, because people will understand how dangerous war is. Maybe nuclear war is how we stop future war. It was Einstein said, that World War IV would be fought with sticks and stones. He said, I don't know how World War III will be fought, because you know, that was innovating so fast. Innovating. But I know World War IV will be fought with sticks and stones. If even that. So I'm ranting. Let's go out to break with a John Solomon clip. Boy, does he have a way of taking something absolutely historic and sensational and making it sound like, you know, totally boring, but this is a big deal. It's everything we told you here it is.
But your take on Maricopa County, you're saying that what's going to happen is we're going to find out the Chinese had a major heavy hand in rigging election? What's your take on the raid yesterday in Maricopa?
Yeah, it wasn't really a raid. It was a grand jury subpoena, but they grabbed the stuff. There will be some search warrants executed in the coming days based on my reporting. They're looking at, in Maricopa County, it's a very technical thing, just like it was in Georgia. Did you follow state law? Because if you didn't administer a federal election as it was supposed to be under state law, you can be charged federally. It's just about doing the right thing and following the law. But above that, not in Maricopa County, not in Fulton County, there is an extraordinary review going on by the CIA director, the FBI director, the director of national intelligence, so Tulsi Gabbard, John Ratcliffe, and Cash Patel. They have found a body of documents that I think will trouble all of us and probably will have a profound effect on the Senate debate over the Save America Act. A lot of senators are sitting up there saying, I don't know if I need to vote for this. I don't know what the politics is. Wait a second. When they find out that maybe voter identities in their state databases were penetrated by China and used in influence operations, that may change their mind. And so I think the debate in the Senate could be informed by what comes out in the next few weeks.
Oh, now, fascinating.
What did I tell you back in October? They had meetings and Gabbard, because the NSA already has all this. They had all this back then. I mean, you think General Flynn and Mike Lindell could have this stuff just off the local networks and that the NSA didn't have it? So remember I told you, China did it. Here's how they did it. They hacked the databases. They hacked the machines, all of it. And they said it's going to be coming out in January. Well, January passed, February passed. We're here in March. You've seen Trump putting out some reports. But still, it's held up. Because they don't want to release their findings off of just the NSA grabbing all the data. And go, look, the NSA was watching everything you did. Because they don't want the kids to understand what's going on. That everything's under surveillance. No, they're now, they call it parallel construction. Like when the government illegally spies on somebody, knows what they did. They then go create kind of a fake investigation to act like they found it this way. Okay? And so now they're raiding all the places to get the actual or, you know, original or that copy. The local copy. There's no really original. It's all the same thing. And, I mean, and it's, they have them by the balls. The Chi-Coms, the Democrats. But I don't see how the CIA, who's been involved in all this, rats themselves out. Especially with the name of the director. But who knows? Sometimes rats rat themselves out. We'll be right back. Stay with us. The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon. AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is, and they're still going to try to stay in control, but because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have Dodge for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore, but the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
Our medical-grade USP ultramethylene blue, exclusively at thealexjonesstore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus, like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a one-month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your ultramethylene blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at thealexjonesstore.com and it funds our operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at thealexjonesstore.com, become a subscriber, and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. Thealexjonesstore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12th, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling three emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and two others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get one or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com. And I salute you for your support.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Defending the Republic from enemies, foreign and domestic. It's Alex Jones.
Now, I see stories like this, I don't know, 5-10 times a day. And there's so many of them, I really don't cover it enough. But it's also, these stories upset me so much that that's why I tend to, I guess, subconsciously not want to go there because I get so angry. We have Jose Garza here in Austin, Texas, who is hands down the worst Soros DA, which says a lot. And he releases people after they shoot random crowds the next day. No bond. Only way you get in trouble is if the cops kill you. You make it to him, you're walking. Cop kills somebody in the line of duty, totally clean shoot. He tries to put him in prison. I mean, you know what he does. You've heard about him all over the country. A mob of people, you know, stop him. Lyft driver point guns at him. Lyft driver shoots him. You go to jail. I'm going to get to this coming up, but it's Austin, man. Legal alien, of course, but they won't tell you that. All these charges dropped of violent assault, beating people half to death, attacking children. And the police chief is down there doing a press conference about up security for South by Southwest. I'll just cover it right now. But I got some more stories that are similar to it. And This guy runs up while somebody is sitting there reading a book, according to witnesses, beats him from behind, stomps his head in so bad the person's in a coma, fighting for their life. And the female police chief goes and basically tackles this guy. That's how bad crime is in Austin. And they suppress the numbers. Our own Jamie White, a year ago and a few days, the year anniversary was just a few days ago, 4 youth, 2 of them 17 adults, 2 of them below 17, and they would never release the information, but mother illegal alien, the young man, the gangbanger, is all over Facebook and Instagram, and Mexican flag, screw the gringo, all this stuff. Mexican flag mask, and then the black guy did rap videos about killing Jamie and killing that cracker and all this stuff. The white guy, killing him with my 9, because that's the tough thing to do, kill. Every few days, another white person gets pushed in front of a subway train, or another white person gets gasoline poured on him. That happens all the time, or the knockout game. And you see some youth stabbed to death at a football game, and they go, oh, it was white on black. He attacked them. Then they release the footage later, and the guy just comes up and stabs him for no reason. But the black leaders get up and say, oh, and, defend it. It's crazy. It's open season on white people. Austin man, like Maryland man, walks up to a stranger using a computer on the 4th floor of the Central Library, punches him in the head so hard he's knocked out of the chair, stomps on his head multiple times while he lies unconscious on the floor, then calmly walks back to his own computer, sits down. The victim is in critical condition with life-threatening injuries. Police Chief Lisa Davis happened to be in one of the building and made the arrest. On a city bus in 2024, Vasquez threatened an 11-year-old boy. Cocked his leg back and kicked him full force, then stood up and punched the kid's mother in the face. She's a Spanish speaker and couldn't even understand the threats. A female bystander tackled Vasquez to protect them. He punched her in the head repeatedly. All was on video. Yeah, there's video of this. Child endangerment charges and 2 assault charges dismissed. And I'm not going to read the rest. It goes on and on. 10 cases of this. 3 felonies, all dismissed. 4 assaults, all dismissed. 0 jury trials because he's got the last name Vasquez. And of course, the guy needs to be in a lunatic asylum, but they don't have those anymore. Just yesterday, I was driving to work. There was a white male, looked like he was about 30, about 6'2", big muscles, his shirt off, running in and out of parking, in and out of cars at a red light, very busy intersection, screaming, I'm going to effing kill you. I'm going to effing just screaming, kill you, kill you. And I was a couple lanes over, he was on the other side, and I'm just watching at the red light while he's screaming and running up to cars. I'm going to murder you. Murder, murder. And I should have thought to get tape, but I'm just trying to stay away from the guy. I'm opening the central console, getting my 9mm out, because there are just foaming at the mouth lunatics running around. Now, if that white guy hurts somebody, he'll spend some time in jail because he's white. They'll throw the book at him. Probably sit to Huntsville for 5 years, 10 years. But not if you're black or Hispanic. It's scary, man. I don't care if you're white, Hispanic, black. You're some psychotic loon attacking people. You got to be locked up. And there are a lot of them, folks. I see some foaming at the mouth crazy person almost every day when I go driving around. It's like they got fact. Yeah, the crazy black guy had been out in jail 40 times assaulting people. Just stabs that woman in the neck. and then black organizations come out and defend it. Like, what does it matter? I don't. He's white. He's black. Lock his ass up. So it's dangerous, folks. Yeah, here's Daniel Vasquez's rap sheet. Hey, guys, have security look into this and find out. I bet money he's an illegal alien. But it won't say. Criminal case history. Just assaults, terroristic threats, criminal trespass. Assaults, aggravated assaults. I mean, just scroll down, show them the whole thing. All right, I'm digressing. It just makes me want to throw up. Attacking children. Oh, you got the name Vasquez. No problem. Bye-bye. And I bet, because Garza does whatever he wants, he's elected, I bet this guy is already out of jail. Yeah, huge outpouring of support for Carmelo Anthony, who allegedly stabbed another team in the heart, should scare us all. And they made up the story that was up in Dallas, made up the story that the white kid attacked him. Of course, it all came out, it wasn't true. Why would you just, out of hand, because the kid's white that died, just say, well, he must have deserved it? Again, because it's open season on white people. By the way, Jose Garza is an admitted Marxist-Leninist. And for him, it's class warfare. I mean, the more whites get killed, the better. That's reparations. You deserve to not have services. You deserve to pay taxes and not be protected. You deserve to have your guns taken. By the way, I didn't get to this yesterday. I dropped the ball. I got to get to it today. They have now passed basically a gun registration confiscation bill in Virginia, just like the one they have in Canada, where they're now confiscating the guns. And they literally put in a CIA operative. And the guy that offered the bill, his name Saddam Hussein, or like Saddam Hussein. I'm not joking. Wasn't born here. Doesn't like our freedoms. Wants to come over here and crap all over it. And now Bondami's having Muslim prayer events with their prayer rugs in his offices. It's all hiking their leg and pissing on us. They do it on purpose. Blocking highways to have their prayers. Blasting their call to prayers. Handing out Qurans at school, making the kids put on hijabs in Germany, in England, in France. They pay the politicians to do that. If you hand out Christmas cards, all these liberal jurisdictions will say, you can't hand those out. That's a Christian thing. You can privately, as a citizen, tell people that you're a Catholic, a Christian, a Muslim. That's fine. If you're a Muslim, you can try to give people Qurans at lunch. But you can't make the kids go to an assembly and sit there and hear about Allah and Muhammad. That is why we have separation of church and state, which a lot of Christians get mad about, but it is in why they pass it, why Jefferson talked about it. It's in the First Amendment, so that the government doesn't have jurisdiction over religion and can't make you follow a state-mandated religion. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. So you cannot have the state involved in directing a religion or saying we have this central religion. But they've been trying to phase out any Christianity, saying, oh, we can't have Christian or Catholic chaplains anymore, even though that's the majority of what people want, because, you know, there's some people offended by that. Well, you don't have to go see the chaplain then. And they've got, in percentage areas where they're, you know, Muslims or wherever, they got that. The point is that they use all of our laws against us and walk all over us and twist them. But the First Amendment is good and protects Christianity. We were founded as a Christian nation. But because you had all these different Christian sects fighting with each other, and the country was founded by religious groups trying to get away from religious oppression, that's why we have the First Amendment. It's because of the Inquisitions. because of the wars between Protestants and Catholics. And then now, under the American system, Christians learn to get along. And when I say Christians, I mean Catholics, too. I just call Christians Catholics. I mean, I call Catholics Christians. You know. The point is that, and now as Christians, we know what the big enemy is. The open Satanist, the Luciferians, the Islamicists, the leftists, the transhumanists. Christians better get their act together and come together under Jesus Christ and get our basic values lined up and fight for them. Because the enemy is coming in like a flood. When the enemy comes in like a flood, the Spirit of the Lord lifts up a standard against it. Now, speaking of that, I'm only going to play like 4 minutes of it because this is a 9-minute clip. It's very powerful. But he joins us, Roger Avery, very famous director and writer. I love his writing, Pulp Fiction, you name it. He was on Joe Rogan a few weeks ago and knocked out of the park. He's coming on today to go deeper into all of this and his intel on Hollywood. This is going to be very important in an hour and 15 minutes from now. Here's some of him on Joe Rogan.
More innocent.
I think Ridley Scott knows things that, and Cormac McCarthy know things about the world that they put on film before everything was known. Like, I think if that movie was released today, people would be like, yeah, that's what's happening today.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, they're putting people in sulfuric acid into milk, into drums.
Yeah,
into,
what the
And shipping them around the world, you know, as a joke. You know, like you know,
that's in the film.
Yeah, there's all.
Well, did you see the thing in the Epstein files?
Oh yeah, like those, they ordered... those Epstein files. In fact, I can't believe that. Like everybody just kind of like, oh, well, okay, and they're moving on with their lives. Did you see that guy at the Atlanta airport flipping out? The well-dressed black dude who just freaks out at in the Atlanta.
When?
Just like a couple of days ago, on I saw it on YouTube and no, I saw it on Twitter or X, and this guy's just. Freaking out in the Atlanta airport. He's like, yeah, I read the Epstein files. Like all of you, you're going about your lives like nothing's happening. Look at you're all zombies. And he's right. It's like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Everybody is just numb to everything. Like, dudes, we had a global pandemic, aliens, you know, all these like revelations. People are, you know, eating babies. Here's
the guy.
Files have been released, and all of y'all are acting normal. All of y'all.
And there's a longer version of that where he's basically like, you're all acting like nothing's happening. Like, what the fuck? You know, you're all just pretending you're just drones
well,
going on in your normal
lives. People
are
waiting for a condensed version that lays out all the facts. It's the people that are, like, really interested in reading all the emails.
I think the Luciferians cast a spell on the world.
And, for real?
Oh, absolutely. Like, you know, it's just like how vampires can't go into a house unless they're invited. They tell you, you know, what's going on ahead of time. It's predictive programming. And once you say it out loud and you put it out there and make fun of it and do a little skit like they – like. Stephen Colbert did a little skit on his show where, oh, here's a baby. I'm going to take this baby and I'm going to give it to Moloch. And he goes into like a cloudy red, you know, furnace and hands the baby over. And he's, oh, the baby's going to be fine. And they make a joke about it and the audience laughs. Okay, we're all now conditioned to it. We've all seen it. And by laughing at it,
but wait a minute.
We were complicit.
You think that that's on purpose, that this is like some sort of grand design
magic
to get us to be desensitized to the idea of demons eating babies?
Yeah, for sure.
Really?
For sure. Nobody's doing anything about it. We know what's happening.
But that has to take, like, there has to be a person or some group of people.
Yeah, like about 8,500 people. Yeah.
That are manipulating the Colbert show?
They're manipulating everything. It's all an illusion.
All right, stop like, right there.
Reality.
Yeah, he's done his research. Rothkopf of the Kissinger Group wrote Superclass and says it's about 3,000. But it's about 100 that then direct them, and then they've got about another 5,000 or so under them that are the mid-level. And I haven't talked to Roger Avery yet, but I'm going to ask, well, how did you know that? I mean, obviously, he's super well-read. He's read what I've read. So that's the frustrating part about this is they tell you how they do it. And my dad, when I was a little kid, you know, on hunting trips and business trips, he took me everywhere with him. When, you know, I was not in school or in sports, and he would just constantly just telling me how the world worked and how everything operated, he'd say, this book by Zbigniew Brzezinski, when you get big enough or of an interest, he explains how the government actually runs the crime syndicates and even the human trafficking for pedophiles, so they, quote, can control it and limit it. By being evil, they can control the evil, but that's a lie. That's unjustifies the means. That's just the cover story on the outer ring of the cult to prepare you for the inner ring. And he'd throw a piece of paper and say, this is how cults work. They have concentric rings going in towards the center of the cult, and the center of the cult follows Satan and wants, you know, humans to be taken over by machines and give up our free will. And he explained, and that's what this book, Childhood's End, by Arthur C. Clarke, is one of their high priests, is all about. And I'm sitting there like 6, 7 years old going, well, I better get good at reading, which I was already good. That's one of the things I'm really good at. I'm not good at spelling. Oh, boy. And I was like, okay. And so I started reading that stuff by the time I was 9 or 10 and just didn't understand a lot of it, but wanted to know more and more and more. And that's all I'm trying to do here is to get you folks to understand this, okay? Because once you understand it, it's like changing your perspective on those hidden image paintings. Like, you can't see it, you can't see it. And finally, when you see it, you can't believe that you couldn't see it before. I'm not telling you what to see. I'm trying to get you to really open your eyeballs up and see it. That's it. I'm not telling you what to think. You can go check all of this out. Again, how did I know they'd have a 6 feet apart and wear masks and close down sporting events? And then train us to stay in our houses because they said they would in Operation Lockstep 2010 and other documents. It just, it's so frustrating to have their battle plan. It's so frustrating to know how they operate. Because they have formulas. They have methodologies. When you got 3,000 people running everything, 8,000 total, but the top 3,000 and 100 above them that come with the exact policies, and all these other expert groups and think tanks, you know, advising them on each part of the problem they want. You have to operate off of formula, off of methodology, by the book, like any big corporation. So once you've seen one of their programs, you've seen them all. You're like, why do they always run the same scams? Because they work. And like Joe said, oh, people are waiting for it all to be handed to them. They're waiting for it to be given to them on a silver platter. That's not how the universe works. You've got to go out and study it and know it for yourself. What does Morpheus tell Neo? He's about to take the red pill. He says, I can't tell you about the Matrix, Neo. You got to take the red pill, and I'll show you what's really going on in Wonderland here. Take the blue pill and go back to sleep. This is a free will deal, and I'm not promising you a bed of roses here. Okay? This is not going to be pleasant. But if you really want to be free, then take it. And that's, and then once you wake up to the Matrix, it doesn't mean your experience outside the Matrix be exactly what I see or my perspective. That's the bending of things through the rose-colored darkly God talks about in the Bible. So we can debate and discuss what we're seeing. Once we put the glasses on, they live, or take the red pill. We don't have to hate each other or attack each other. Just know that we're seeking the truth. And that's what we're doing. That's why I got so mad at Candace Owens and her surrogates, is I was just very friendly. Hey, I checked the Egyptian plane thing. It's not true. Oh, you're a traitor for the Israelis. And I'm like, no, I believe there's a cover-up of Kirk's murder. I went and checked to see this is real. It's not. And this Mitch Snow guy's not, he's a liar. And they're like, you are a traitor. And I'm like, I'm mad at you for saying that. I owe it to my listeners to not lie to them. Lord knows I make enough mistakes. But I shouldn't even have engaged that, because something like that, that's all emotional, you can't help people that are in their own. And I've always been good about that, and I shouldn't have done it. And I've apologized to the listeners, not to Candace or anybody, but to the listeners that I went down that rabbit trail because you... They want to say you're covering up what really happened to Charlie Kirk just because you say you're doing your investigation. These parts are wrong. Here's the proof. And they go, well, investigations make mistakes. I know. And I told you when you made mistakes, and you now admit you were wrong. Where's the Egyptian plane? When are you going to, you've got the proof that you were right? You were going to publish it. Still waiting. Still waiting. Oh, 13 days ago, I told you this war is going to go a long time. I was right. All you that attacked me saying, oh, no, it'll be over in a few days. I just want to beat the globalist, okay? I get very frustrated because I know what I'm talking about. 99% of the time I'm right. Nobody is as right as me. I'm not bragging. I just, you know, if there's somebody that's got the answers, if there's somebody that's got a track record, that's who I listen to. And by the way, it's not just me. The guests I have on are the people that are right over and over and over and over again. Kyle Serafin. I think he's been more right than I have on the things he's called. I mean, I think he's batting like 1,000. Well, he endorsed Cash Patel and got conned by him, so he's apologized for that. But so he's not batting 1,000. The point is, he's batting close to it. And it's just about, you know, if there's a surgeon that has way better outcomes than any other surgeon, you want to go to them. You know what I mean? If there's a car that's known that lasts longer and is better, like Japanese vehicles. Now, we had to compete. Ours have gotten better. But I remember in the 80s, we'd buy a brand new U.S. car and break in a month. Their stuff was so junky. I mean, this company has a Acura that is 22 years old and still runs great. Even though we don't take care of it out there. 22 years old. Unbelievable. All right, I'm digressing. Speaking of taking care of vehicles, your body's like a vehicle. Take care of it. There's a big sale going right now. The original X2's back, but even stronger. It's called T3. 50% off for VIPs, 25% off for everybody else. It will sell out, but more's coming in a month or so. It's so good for your cells, so good for your whole body. It's the missing link. Most people that have deficiencies, it's iodine. It's talk to your physician before you take it. It's really strong, but it is so powerful for your entire body, your eyesight, your libido, your energy. Most of you out there have iodine deficiency. Most of the other stuff that has iodine is a bound iodine, meaning it's tied to another element, so you don't absorb it as well. This is really special, and it's exclusively available right now at theyellowstonestore.com. Also, America 250-year anniversary limited edition T-shirt for $14.99. That's at the cost, 60% off. It is also up there. That's going to end next week. We have the March Mega Sale that ends on the 17th, up to 40% off on the bovine colostrum, methylene blue, and all the other great products at thealexjonesstore.com. Can't do it without you. Amazing products. Want to thank you all for your support. Please go to thealexjonesstore.com right now. Be sure to become a VIP. Get $40 to spend in the store instantly. The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have Dodge for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Introducing Ultra DNA Revival, the advanced daily supplement designed to help you feel and perform at your absolute best, starting at the cellular level. Backed by cutting-edge mitochondrial and DNA support science, Ultra DNA Revival delivers noticeable all-day energy without stimulants or crashes, faster recovery and greater endurance, sharper focus and mental clarity, support for healthy blood sugar levels, stronger immune system function, enhanced liver health and natural detoxification, reduces everyday stress and anxiety, protection against oxidative stress and the visible signs of aging. And again, this is a private label of an already best-selling brand that found this. Thousands of customers report feeling the difference in as little as 7 to 14 days. Right now, take advantage of our best pricing ever. VIP members, $34.95. Regular, $59.59. Save over 40% with a VIP membership for $30 a month. Experience the revival your body has been waiting for. Secure your DNA revival today at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
State investigators backed by the New Mexico Department of Justice under Attorney General Raul Torres launched a full-scale search of the former Epstein estate.
The so-called Truth Commission seeks to identify ranch guests and state officials who may have known what was going on at the 7,600-acre property or taken part in alleged sexual abuse.
The fact of the matter was that he was basically doing anything he wanted in this state without any accountability whatsoever. And the ranch that exists out near Stanley, New Mexico, is basically on a two-lane highway in the middle of nowhere. It was him with an airstrip and a sprawling place that he brought folks to that we know very little, if nothing, about.
Now renamed San Rafael Ranch and owned by Texas businessman Don Huffine since 2023, oddly enough.
This was obviously a dark place, and we wanted to put light in a dark place. It always shines the brightest when you do that.
Hang on a minute. Why did Republican Texas comptroller candidate Don Huffines, through his venture firm Hest Investments, pour $1.8 million into Secretome Therapeutics back in 2024, a biotech outfit pushing regenerative medicine with their lead product STM-01, derived from neonatal cardiac progenitor cells sourced from babies under 30 days old, specifically infant heart tissue from newborns with congenital defects undergoing surgery. Meanwhile, Huffine's family snapped up Jeffrey Epstein's notorious Zorro Ranch in New Mexico at public auction years after the notorious transhumanist's death. A Texas politician tied to Epstein property in New Mexico, who is now invested in transhumanist therapies, literally banking on infant hearts. Bizarre. Epstein openly discussed using the ranch as a base for outlandish eugenics-inspired schemes, including plans to impregnate multiple women with his DNA to seed an improved human race through artificial insemination and genetic engineering, ideas he pitched to scientists from the Santa Fe Institute and other elite circles he courted in New Mexico.
My name is Juliet Bryant. I was kidnapped by Jeffrey Epstein 22 years ago. A lot of frightening things happened there.
I went outside to have a cigarette. I saw these three lights like in a triangle formation. But everything got weird. I felt very scared. But then what happened is I got locked out. I couldn't get back in. And that's also the time when I have that sort of flashback where I wake up paralyzed in a lab. There were six beings in hazmat suits around me. There's like a female doctor by my head.
It's okay.
Whispers of even darker horrors have swirled around Zorro Ranch for years, fueled by an anonymous 2019 email purporting to come from a former staffer claiming that two foreign girls died by strangulation during rough fetish sex and were buried in the quiet hills nearby on orders from Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell.
In fact, there are records dating back to the mid-1990s of abuse happening at the ranch, including a report to the FBI in 1996 by a survivor and multiple other reports over the years. And one of the significant and important pieces of this case is to understand why justice was never pursued at the state, local, or federal level.
Zorro Ranch isn't short of strange. Back in July 2008, right as Epstein was checking into his cushy Florida jail suite for that sweetheart plea deal, his Zorro Trust suddenly clutched a $80 million winning Powerball ticket by none other than Bryce Gordon, Epstein's longtime ranch manager and the guy listed as trustee who signed off on the payout. The payout is confirmed by public records. Sounds more like a payoff. Epstein starts prison time and boom, his New Mexico playground gets an eight-figure cash infusion, likely to keep something very quiet. This renewed scrutiny could finally unearth long-buried truths or expose how deep the rot truly went. in Epstein's empire of exploitation and delusion. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
That is a powerful report. You need to get that right now and share it. The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks, you still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have guys for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robinson was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March mega sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
Well, get ready for this. And you're going to say, well, we already heard this from you 13 days ago. Yep, just like clockwork. This is all baked into the threat escalation ladder. Iran has been studied. The mullahs have been studied for 47 years in depth. And I've reviewed the different organizations, groups, Pentagon that studied them. They don't do false flags. The Iranians are pretty straightforward. And when they tell you that they're going to do something, they do it. Or they die trying. They said, you attack us and take out our military. We're going to close the Strait of Hormuz. They've done that. And now they say they're going to physically close it if we don't leave the Middle East entirely in the next few weeks. And they have also said that they will activate their asymmetrical systems that we, quote, can't deal with. And their Ayatollah, if he's even still alive, the government, put out a statement, as you know, 2 days ago saying, we are now preparing to activate our non-conventional forces, which means sleeper cells, which adds to credibility of the White House a few days before that, saying we got the go code to start attacks inside the United States and Europe. Now, were the attacks yesterday? Were the attacks yesterday in Virginia at Old Dominion University and at the Jewish Center in Michigan? Were those sleeper cells? I don't believe so. Just like I don't believe the attack 13 days ago in Austin was. It's a lone wolf angry about what happened to their Pope. And now we know the guy that attacked the Jewish Center was mad, Lebanese, had family killed a week ago in airstrikes in Lebanon. The other guy was convicted of aiding ISIS and only spent 6 years in prison. He was convicted in 2017, got out in 2023. Totally insane. Goes in, shoots an instructor, shoots other people, instructor dies, he dies. When ROTC students killed him, reportedly with their bare hands. So, there you go. Thank God there were some fighters at the university. And now this, and you knew it was coming. Trump says last Sunday, the war's over, we're ending it. Iran says, no, you're not. We're not going to stop. Mines the Strait of Hormuz. Israel says, we're not stopping. What did I say then will happen? Trump will now move the Marines with the Expeditionary Amphibious Landing Force, like the Coronado. They're little aircraft carriers that carry the attack helicopters and the amphibious landing craft, the big hovercraft. That is now sailing towards the Strait of Hormuz. Pentagon is moving additional Marines, warships to the Middle East. That just broke an hour ago. Now, if you think 5,000 Marines, as good as they are going to be able to take the other side of the Strait of Hormuz, which is the most honeycombed, intense military zone in Iran, and it's where their National Guard is based. And they have got, just like North Korea has the DMZ, wired with explosives everywhere, wired with mines, trapdoors with artillery, large and small, missiles by the thousands, small grenades by the hundreds of thousands, millions probably. I mean, this is walking into an absolute trap. I've talked to a lot of military experts on air, off air. To take the Strait of Hormuz and hold it with what Iran's got, 50,000 troops for the initial, hundreds of attack helicopters, drones, air cover, and we've got that. We've got the air cover, but not 50,000. Because you're going to have to push back 10 miles at least. You look at the topography. In fact, pull the Strait of Hormuz, guys. I've looked at it. It goes inland for a few miles and then hills and then mountains. Iran's encircled by mountains. What do you think's up in those mountains? They have been fortifying it for decades. There's artillery. And yeah, they roll artillery out of a cave or they assemble it and they get 10 shots off before a predator drone drops a hellfire on them. It doesn't matter. They just hit our troops. They just hit our ships. And they got thousands of artillery pieces there, reportedly. The crazy North Koreans are reported to have 100,000 pieces of artillery on the DMZ. Look it up. The Iranians, thousands of artillery. That's why Matt Bracken, great military historian, said it'll be like Gallipoli in World War I. Look at that death trap right there. It's sheer cliff walls coming down thousands of feet to a tiny shoreline, honeycombed with booby traps and caves, and manned by suicidal killers. Say what you want about the Iranians. They are tough. They are smart, and they are ready to die and ready to kill Marines and ready to kill the 82nd Airborne. And our guys are tough, too. But feeding them into... We go back to the topography right there, folks. Have you ever seen such a death trap if you've studied military history and tactics? I mean, look at that. And all those islands are armed bases. Remember what we had to do in World War II, losing tens upon tens upon tens of thousands of troops, sometimes tens of thousands per island, to secure the islands marching towards Japan in that naval march, as they called it. Do you have any idea? Pete Hegg says the Strait of Hormuz, which is closed because Iran is bombing it, is actually open for transit so long as Iran does not bomb the Strait. But Iran does bomb any ship not authorized by them. They have to call them. Iranian gunboats land with their pilots, and if they are Russian or Chinese, they let them through. And look, I like Hegg Seth. I think he's a good man. He's a good leader. There's a great record, and he's doing his job executing the president's plan. But for heaven's sakes, Hegseth, do not gaslight people. The Strait is open if they don't attack, because Trump wants to say the war's over and it's open, and oh, go on through, ships, it's fine. And then ship, they've blown up four of them the last few days? No, it ain't open. Just don't say that to us. But see, they're trying to pretend, because even when Trump says that, oil goes down for a day and people figure out it's not true. It goes back up. And Trump keeps doing that. It's not having the same effect. You can't bullcrap. The reason you don't lie, A, it's wrong. B, people don't believe you anymore. And we need people to believe Hegg Seth. Stop peeing on me and telling me it's raining. Please? That would be nice. I think we have a clip of Hegg Seth saying it here. Go ahead and roll that clip of Hegg Seth.
The only thing prohibiting transit in the Straits right now is Iran shooting at shipping. It is open for transit should Iran not do that.
That's not even really gaslighting. It's, I guess he's making the point that Iran's the one that closed it. Yeah, we know that, Pete. I guess he's talking to the mainstream media. They are retarded. So I guess he wasn't gaslighting. I was just reading the headline. I guess you have to talk to them like they're 3 years old. I guess that's true. Like, Iran is the one that's doing it. But we knew that when we went in there, they were going to do this. So, how big is the 82nd Airborne? Give me a troop number on that. What's the total number, 82nd Airborne? And what percentage of the 82nd Airborne is combat unit? So you'll have that number, and 5,000 Marines are supposed to go tank that. Sounds like Custer's last stand to me. And here's the problem. You can bomb for months those mountains. It's thousands of square miles that you can put men and artillery in. Not to mention all the spider holes. I'm going to predict this right now. If Trump sends in the Marines and the Army, you're going to get dozens of helicopters shot down. You're going to get, I'd say thousands of troops are going to die. And we've gotten really good at not getting troops killed. And I don't know if America has stomach for this. Because up close, it won't matter how fancy our weapons are. All right, total force, 17,000, 18,000 paratroopers. And the question is, how many of those aren't in support? Let's just say it's 18,000. So 18,000 to 5,000 is 23,000 troops. The numbers I've gotten is at least 50,000. And again, you're going to have to put them also on top of the Iranians. You're going to have to take the ground. Go back to that graphic if we can, the topography. You're going to have to put them up on top. And the Iranians know that. So they're going to be waiting on the shore, in the hills, in the mountains, and on top and behind. And that's why we need, I've talked to folks about it, 50,000. And how many targets is that here? Go back to that number again. 82nd Airborne Division, the Specialized Airborne Infantry Division, 6,500 active duty soldiers as a premier rapid deployment unit that maintains specialized parachute qualified brigade combat teams of about 5,000 soldiers ready to deploy in 18 hours. Yeah, so the rapid reaction, the cream is 5,000. But let's just say they're going to put all 18,000 in and all the Marines. 23,000 soldiers to go in there. How many Marines took Iwo Jima? Look that up. And how many Marines died in Iwo Jima? Now, granted, they didn't have Apache helicopters. I'm just saying, going to be a lot of coffins. And I know I'll get comments. You're just a pussy. You. The people always doing that are Lindsey Graham types. Listen, if our country's actually threatened, we need to lose 500,000 troops. That's the way it is. You signed up for it. But not for something like this. No. No. Approximately 70,000 U.S. Marines as part of the total joint force. Around 110,000 troops landed on Iwo Jima during the Battle of Iwo Jima, which began February 19, 1945. The invasion involved the 3rd, 4th, 5th Marine Divisions, with over 30,000 Marines landing on the first day in the first wave. Let's see how many died. Let's show that flag, that famous iconic symbol of the flag being raised on Iwo Jima. Go back. How many Marines died? 7,000 They're in a 36-day battle. So that's 6,000-7,000 more than we're going to send in. And again, our weapons work real good when we're up there at 60,000 feet. But up close, there'll be a lot of body bags. And then you know what happens. I know Americans. People are going to get pissed, and they're going to demand total war, and then we're going to invade Iran and then set up the artillery perimeters and just expand, and it'll take, if we're super successful, and the mullahs might actually fall when that starts. It's actually a probability. I don't want to encourage this behavior, roll the dice. $50,000 dead troops on our side, take it in a month, have to level the place with artillery, which the Russians haven't done in Ukraine. The Russians just pull up to a city, just level it in a week and move in. But if we go scorched earth and just level the place and just kill everybody, I mean, we could win it in a week if we hit them with nukes, but you have to kill everybody, basically. You do call their cities, but then we're international war criminals. You think America's unpopular now? We I love the good old boys. I say turn it in the parking lot. Well, you know, have you thought that? What do you think that's going to do to the economy? Let's say kill all the Muslims. Don't start entertaining my dark side. You know, I might actually join you in that. No, you need to understand that the stock market will guaranteed crash. Oil will triple, and the recovery is over as you know it, and the bankers win, and total tyranny comes in, and then they will 100% activate their sleeper cells, and they'll be 1,000 times the lone wolves, and we're it's going to make what happened in Mexico a month ago or 3 weeks ago look like a walk in the park. And see, whenever I talk about this, I see the comments, because I love comments. I love to see what you have to say, but I see a lot of comments. Jones, Trump has the best intel, and it's not going to go bad like this. Oh, we're not. It's going to last 4 days, Alex. No, they're not going to send in troops to the Strait of Hormuz. Stop lying. And then now they're gearing. No, I'm following doctrine. It's called the threat escalation ladder models. I am simply telling you, set doctrine. It's been war-gamed every different angle you can imagine. And so when I keep turning out to be right, it's not that I'm that smart. I know how. It's like if I'm going to try to fix an engine, and I got to do it myself, I'm going to read manuals, I'm going to look at it, I'm going to find out about it, and I'm going to take my time, and I'm going to try to do it. If I was going to try to, you know, battlefield surgery, somebody's got a broken leg, I don't know how to set it. Oh, I got a book on how to do it. I'll do the best job I can. I am simply going and studying the art of this. And that's why Trump was told, don't do this. It goes from bad to worse. And it becomes this giant pissing contest now between the Iranians, Israel, and the United States. And how are we doing in that pissing contest right now? Not too good. Because we're up against people that are complete lunatics. Or put this way, they believe in what they believe and they're willing to die for it. And so they're not going to give up. I saw reports today, you know, Trump, oh, the regime is days away from falling. And that's propaganda to convince the Iranians to give up. Those people aren't giving up no matter what happens. Tens of thousands of them, including their president, marched through the city streets for hours today while bombs were dropped on targets around them. Those targets had already been chosen. And I guarantee you, the Israelis and the U.S. are probably scrambling just to go try to kill them. What do you think when people march for hours? They're saying, kill us, kill us. We're not giving up. Question for Hegseth. He was asked, have you said the military has aerial naval superiority over Iran, yet we're not escorting ships to the Strait of Hormuz? How did you not plan for this? Hegseth, we planned for it. We recognize it. Because ultimately, we want to do it sequentially in a way that makes the most sense for what we have to achieve. Well, that's totally true. You know, the liberal, Aaron Rupar, is acting like that's a dumb answer. No, I mean, we wait. Then if they block it, Trump threatens them. They keep doing it. We invade. And here come the Marines. But if Trump thinks 5,000 Marines and 18,000 airborne troops are going to go in there when it makes Iwo Jima look like a cakewalk, well, that's why Trump has a blind spot for military operations. Yeah, we can drop 30,000-pound bombs down your house. We can shoot a missile up your ass. But when it comes to mountain terrain with psychotic-trained killers who will not give up like robots, you are going to get a bunch of people killed. And if you're willing to get thousands and thousands of U.S. Marines and Army killed, we'll probably succeed. But that's regime change, isn't it, Trump? That's full war, Trump. That's not what you ran on, is it, Trump? And I'm just supposed to forget that. Well, I'm not going to. Oh, I love it. Get this clip. Oh, my God. I mean, play victim all day long. I mean, look, everybody knows I don't have a fetish for attacking Israel. Anybody I'm upset with, I don't hate them personally, but good God, the spokespersons for the Jews are just the worst. ADL CEO Jonathan Greenblatt warns that Jews are being blamed for the war against Iran and the Middle East, which they unilaterally started. Yeah, Israel drug us into it, lobbied, bragged about it, got us into this, and now that guy has been instrumental in getting me censored. He wants to censor all of you, is whining about it. Cry me a river. Talk about not taking responsibility. Again, it'd be like walking up to somebody at a restaurant to a family and punching the dad right in the nose and breaking it. And then the dad gets up and punches you back and you go, I'm calling the police. The gaslighting is just, here, let's hear from him. Here it is.
We are seeing Jewish people, the Jewish state, blamed for the war in the Middle East. That is wrong. It is wrong to scapegoat. It is wrong to hold Jewish people accountable for something you don't like on the other side of the planet. And we really need leaders on all sides, in politics, running for office, podcasters, to stop with the conspiracies, to stop with the accusations, and then tell us, but we oppose anti-Semitism. You don't get to say you're opposed to hate if you're trafficking in hateful conspiracy theories. Everyone needs to dial down the rhetoric, to take a step back, and to start doing something to stop this epidemic before it gets even worse.
And it's continuing all over the country right now, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, look, at ADL, we focus on protecting the Jewish community. We have never been busier. Like our whole.
Oh, yeah, your donations have never been better. Netanyahu's never been, more power. Get everybody in a war, commit all the Jews to be under you that gets them in the trouble. Now, if he just said it like this, a random synagogue doesn't deserve to be shot up because of what Israel's doing. Not all Jews agree with this war. I'd say, yeah, that's true. No, you instead said there's all these conspiracies about Israel being involved and Israel doing it. Then he attaches Jews to that and actually puts the idea out. Oh, we've never been busier. Oh, yeah. You know exactly what you're doing, Greenblatt. You are sick. Man, you're evil. The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon AI surveillance systems, all the big tech is, and they're still going to try to stay in control, but because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have guys for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore, but the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that. When you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, Methylene Blue T-shirt, and more. Take advantage of that right now at TheAlexHomeStore.com. The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have dodge for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at TheAlexHomeStore.com. We have a new product in at TheAlexHomeStore.com. Now, you've been asking for DNA Force, but we brought it back, but even stronger. And ladies and gentlemen, if you want stamina, energy, clarity with no letdown and incredible health, this is it. Ultra DNA Revival. And it's key to understand that all of the ingredients in this are organically derived. You can buy synthetic versions that don't work as good. In some cases, it can be toxic for maybe 10% of the price. But despite the fact this has top-end ingredients, it's still very, very affordable. Now, you can go spend a day, and I hope you do, at TheAlexHomeStore.com, looking at the ingredients that are in this and then looking at how they're organically derived and how each ingredient itself is a game-changer for you and your family. So if you want to boost your clarity, your focus, your energy, your immune system, your overall health, this is the product for you. And the first run is now available right now at TheAlexHomeStore.com.
Now, back to our program.
I have some very exciting news. Optimal Human is hands down the best green superfood, super nutrient concentrate I've ever had. The folks at Bigly have had this out for years, and it's their star product, and it became a bestseller very quickly because people, when they got it, loved it so much. If I told you everything that's in it and how concentrated it is, it would take an hour. This has the kitchen sink and then some in it. If you're missing any of the trace, not just the stuff they say is essential, but all the other trace elements and vitamins and prebiotic and probiotics, it's got everything in it. And again, these are all concentrated, and it's got a bunch of stuff for healthy energy in it too. So folks absolutely love Optimal Human, and it works synergistically with the Shilajit, the Irish Sea Moss, the Ultimate Turmeric, and the Methylene Blue. We've been sold out of this. It came in, and I finally got it a couple days ago, and man, is it awesome. It is a game changer. If you haven't gotten it, you are really missing out at TheAlexJonesStore.com. And so it never sells out. Be sure to become a subscriber and get special discounts when you do that.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. You are listening to an InfoWars.com frontline report. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. From deep in the heart of FEMA Region 6, Austin, Texas, transmitting worldwide, it's Alex Jones.
Kyle Serafin, FBI whistleblower, talk show host, podcaster, father, patriot, Christian, on with the terror attacks we've been seeing. The one 13 days ago in Austin, the two attacks yesterday, the people in New York earlier in the week, you know, throwing the mother of death bomb that didn't detonate. I believe these are lone wolves, but the real angle here he wants to get into is how it's citizens standing up and how it's citizens defending themselves in these cases. But before we do that, we got something new for you at TheAlexJonesStore.com, a really great deal. People are always asking for this, so we got it. Text InfoWars to 342581. We'll put that on screen, please. Text InfoWars to 342581 to get a free methylene blue tincture liquid bottle with the purchase of any product. You can buy the $14 limited edition 250th anniversary 1776 shirt that's at cost, $14.95, and get a free bottle of the tincture. That's a massive loss leader. The deal ends Monday, March 16th. Text InfoWars to 342581 to get a free bottle of methylene blue that'll change your life, and it's simply amazing. Also, our original X2 real atomic iodine, meaning not bound to any element. You have to have a DEA license with a manufacturer to even make it. It's legal once it's put into the tincture. You can, you know, watch Breaking Bad. You can use raw iodine for all sorts of bad stuff. But it's nothing but good once it's in the organic glycerin oil for you. Now it's called T3 because we've upgraded it even stronger. T3 trifecta iodine, thealexjonesstore.com. 50% off for VIPs, 25% off for everybody else. And we have the March Mega Sale ends the 17th, up to 40% off on the NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force, Iris CMOS, Methylene Blue, and more, just across the board, thealexjonesstore.com. I want to thank you all for your support. But if you don't get the iodine, you're nuts. Take hours to get into all the things it does. It's the missing link. Most people have iodine deficiency. Most iodine is bound, so you don't absorb it. In the 20s and 30s, they found massive IQ reductions and deformities across the U.S. because people weren't getting enough iodine because of the soil being depleted. And so they put a little bit of sodium fluoride into the salt, and IQs went up 15 to 20 points. Look it up. That's bound iodine. This is real iodine that goes right into your cells. Incredible. Get your T3 now. TheAlexJonesStore.com. All right, Kyle Serafin. We'll take that screen down real quick for me in just a second. Kyle Serafin is our guest here today, just popping in ahead of the massive guest we've got joining us, Roger Avery, the famous writer and director into the satanic elite, the Hollywood elite, and his real inside baseball. It's going to be powerful. You don't want to miss that. And the latest Epstein developments. We've been focused on war for 13 days, and we've been kind of distracted from the ongoing deep state machinations. But in the 20 minutes we have left with our guest, we'll give him the floor on these terror attacks, what he thinks behind it, what he thinks is coming next, what he thinks the intel from the White House that the go code's been given to real sleeper cells, what those attacks might look like, or can we have a deep state false flag as a pretext to expand the war, the Marines being sent with an expeditionary force, 5,000, to invade the other side and secure it, as I predicted they would do, 82nd Airborne being sent, as I told you. This is so dangerous. To talk about it all is veteran of the Air Force and veteran of the FBI, Kyle Serafin. Kyle, thanks for being here with us.
Hey, Alex. Good to be with you. So I'll tell you something. I'm watching this kind of this information op that rolls out across the country, and it happened a couple days ago. This week has been really full of it. We had a first notice that we were going to see drone strikes in California. Do you remember that? That popped up like either Tuesday evening, Wednesday morning. And I saw it on ABC. I saw Nick Sorter on X, and a couple of others were out there, you know, talking about how this was going to happen. And then you go and you look at the actual story, and I brought up the ABC story because I think it's really funny. It's sitting on my screen right now. This is always the way that it runs. We start off with this sort of like wild danger, and the actual warning the FBI put out was, we recently acquired unverified information that as of early February 2026, Iran allegedly, so we now have unverified and allegedly, I'm just going to call these out as I see them, aspired to conduct a surprise attack using unmanned aerial vehicles, that's drones, on an unidentified vehicle off the coast. So now another sort of vagary. The United States homeland, specifically unspecified targets, I'm just highlighting all these things, in California in the event that these strikes were done. We have no additional information on the timing, the method, the target, or the perpetrators of these alleged attacks. So you have this wild moment where the FBI is saying, we don't really know anything about who, the what, the where, the why, or the how, except that it might be drones. And then this rolled out this week as kind of a scare tactic.
So it's like saying, I read it written on a bathroom wall.
It might as well be, yeah, a call for a good time, or also beware of Iranian drone strikes. And here's the best part about it. This issued warning came out at the end of February. Well, we're now in the middle of March. And so this was 2-3 days ago that we saw that the FBI was making this push. They were obviously pushing a media narrative so that all the news stations would cover it. If you go look, the story that I'm looking at is dated March 11th. They were all roughly in that range.
And you've always 12th. Been right about stuff when you speculate later it comes out. What is your speculation on why they did this?
They did just want to get people ramped up to kind of say the FBI is doing work. So I want people to zoom out just a little bit. We've been hearing about sleeper cells from various different, you know, Muslim Islamic groups for about 25 years. This has been the ongoing drumbeat that you've seen out of the intelligence apparatus from the United States government justifying surveillance on Americans. And they've been talking about it for a very long time. We have intermittent lone wolf attacks. But here's what I want the bigger picture, because I need people to think about this critically. If there were, in fact, lone wolf attacks, and you actually, or I'm sorry, not lone wolf, sleeper cells that were from Iran, like hiding in the United States, ready to activate. You kill the supreme leader of Iran. You start a bombing campaign that's now in its second, you know, almost going into its third week. When is the time for them to strike? Never? Because this is where it gets really dumb. You have to start looking and saying, well, the best evidence that there are, in fact, no sleeper cells that we've been warned about for a long time is that there's no sleeper cells that come up. Are you hearing about the FBI busting them? No. Do you still see intermittent lone wolf attacks like someone driving into a synagogue somewhere or someone going and shooting up a university? Yes. So what we've learned is, and this is what I want people to consider, because you're about to have to talk to your senators and your congressmen.
You used to work in counterterrorism, so this is your wheelhouse.
Yeah, I've probably done 40 national priority terrorism surveillance cases where we were out there. A lot of them were ended up in arrest. Almost all of them are set up by the FBI, it turns out. The ones that we were on that were the biggest deal that actually ended up in arrest, they almost always have the same elements. And I call it the playbook, but there's a lot of names for it. Trevor Aronson calls it the terror factory. He's on the left. So people on the left and the right can agree.
Yeah, I mean, FBI, I remember the numbers decades ago. It was like 97% of terror plots are hatched by the FBI.
Yeah, there's a meme about it at this point. It's like FBI interrupts FBI terrorist plot. You know, thanks FBI for their great work. This is kind of what we see. And what it does, it always involves the same elements. People can find it themselves when they look in the news story or when you look at the indictment or the complaints. There's going to be
a low IQ individual. But we'll have the trans shooters always for months saying, I'm going to kill people, and posting online. They're never stopped. And then when you get the real lone wolves, they never stop them. Or the guy that attacked, you know, on you know, down in New Orleans, and the other guy attacks, and then another. I mean, they never seem to stop the real ones.
There's a handful of like sort of patterns you can follow. Number one, the attack gets through, which means no one knew about it. Right? That's one possibility. And that happens. That's what you ended up with, someone driving to a synagogue. Also, when those things happen, overwhelmingly they're stopped by local law enforcement or a local surveillance or a security force or an armed citizen. So it's not the FBI that responds to some terrorist attack that's going to stop it. So that's part one. Then there's the ones the FBI is actually setting up where they found some low IQ individual. They want to groom them to go do a terrorist attack to be able to, you know, bump up their metrics.
That's the Governor Whitmer case is the prime example of that.
Well, and that's from the what they call the right-wing domestic extremism or, you know, racially motivated white supremacy type thing. But the Islamic thing is just the same. They were doing this stuff in the early 2000s. They go groom some guy. He'd have some bad idea. He'd be online. They'd actually just had the guy that was out in Virginia. If you look at what happened at the school in Virginia at Old Dominion, that individual had been arrested previously, and his story follows exactly what you think the playbook would be. So Virginia shooter that was just killed, by the way, by students. Not by even law enforcement responses. It was like an ROTC class, and some young enterprising men decided to like jump the guy and not wait to be killed. Good on them. Apparently killed the shooter with a knife. And what you find out is that the FBI in 2015-16 identified this dude. Then they started grooming him along. They actually had him introduced to an FBI confidential human informant. That's the common thread. There's almost always a confidential human informant or an FBI undercover. Some of them work with the JTTF, so they're local law enforcement officers out of NYPD or Philly or whatever. But most of the time, it's going to be this confidential human informant, that's a source, that gets handed off to an FBI undercover of some kind. And then they just set the guy up and they give him all the bad ideas.
Sure, I just want to say, to buy a gun. They're at Old Dominion, good job. Those guys killing that piece of crap. That's good.
That's exactly right. With a knife that a student had on. So imagine what happens.
We still got some Americans around here.
Well, and this is almost always the case, and this is actually the same story that happened in, if you look at what happened in Michigan. The FBI, people look at it and go, oh, there might have been a false flag event, because the FBI conducted a training at that synagogue, at that community center.
They're doing
center,
them constantly.
All the time. It's a nonstop job for some of these guys to go out there and do this. They do what's called alert training, which is done out of Texas State University down at San Marcos.
I mean, the security company that does our security, their main job is just training colleges and schools. They're constantly in Central Texas, just... So if there's a drill, the next week there's a shooting, doesn't automatically mean it was staged.
Correct. But what it does mean is that the most likely person to respond to a shooting near you is going to be people that are trained near you. And what it also tells us is that the FBI doesn't actually serve the function because, as you said, private training can do it. I've got friends that do it for free all over the country for schools, for churches, and so on. So what we will see, though, is a push to try to make the FBI relevant, and they already started at the beginning of this week saying there might be drone attacks. We have credible information with no information. Then they were out talking about sleeper cells. Donald Trump himself was out talking about how he was briefed on sleeper cells. There's no evidence that those pop up. Then you get some guy whose family dies in Lebanon, and he decides to drive into a community center up in Michigan. He gets killed almost instantly by armed security, which is the right answer, that the people closest to you are defending you. And then you have the same sort of a guy guy that the FBI had previously arrested, probably radicalized in prison even further than he recently was. He was originally arrested for ISIS charges, like material support of terrorism.
Right, he's only spent 6 years, but we know this. You're an expert.
Then they let him out. My point to you is that what we're about to see is the FBI argue that all of the stuff that they're doing is working, even though there's no evidence of it, because they're not finding, they're not identifying or breaking up sleeper cells. And then they're also saying, but we still have these lone wolves that get through. And so that's why we need more FISA and surveillance, and that's about to come up.
So you're saying this is all to legitimize the police state?
I think that's exactly what's going on. And we are in the next few weeks going to see debate in Congress, in the Senate. They're going to talk about re-legitimizing, reauthorizing FISA and FISA 702, which is warrantless spying on Americans. And I can attest to that.
This is all perfect timing. Totally agree. We got to get you back up next week to hammer this. But while I've got you with your expertise, what do you make of sending the Marines to basically tell Iran you can't close the strait? If you study the topography there, sheer mountains, armed camp, it's built like a death trap for an amphibious force to land under almost total 360 coverage in a bowl. I mean, I could not imagine a more perfect scenario for a death trap.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. It also sounds like we're seeing Fox News start beating the drums of war and kind of legitimizing the idea that we're going to need ground troops. So we've really moved the ball on this, and this is a problem because Donald Trump went out at an anti-Tom Massey rally, day before yesterday, and he declared victory. So I'm not trying to be anti-American. I'm not trying to be anti-troop. I love the guys that work there. I know that people who are in the military, guys that I serve with, they wake up every day and they want to go to war because that's what they train for. Everybody wants to play in the big game when you go out and spend all your time lifting weights, training at your shooting, communicating, doing the trade that you have, like getting a chance to do it is the goal. And yet we should be judicious with our use of force. And more importantly, when we have a commander in chief who's already declaring victory and saying we already won. In fact, we won on day one. We took out the regime. We've eliminated their short range ballistic missiles capabilities. We smashed and obliterated their nuclear, ambitions. What are we doing then? Why are we still hanging out? And I've heard Josh Hawley now say it. I've heard Donald Trump himself say it. I've heard a number of people that should be in positions to be able to make sort of authoritative statements that we came in, even though it was kind of muddy. They've laid out their criteria of potential wins. And then you got Donald Trump actually telling us we already won, but what does finish the job look like? And now we're going to put Marines
totally
in harm's
agree.
Way.
I said 13 days ago, I said, Trump, we know it's regime change. You're walking us all into this. If you don't know that, you're being walked into it. Blow up the missiles, declare victory and stop now, or you're in a full trap. You will not remove the regime within, a month. You're being set up. This will destroy the economy. This is COVID 2.0. They used COVID to stop your agenda last time. Now he's taking the bait again, and they're basically now admitting that. So he's saying it's over, it's over, it's over. And the Iranians are like, no, it ain't over. The Israelis are saying it's not over. And then the worst messaging ever. Already won or got to finish the job. Trump administration's mixed message on Iran. This is dangerous.
It's really stupid.
How does Trump extricate himself from this? What's your advice to the president?
You just say we won. That's easy. He could do it any day. He could say we won. The objectives we had, whatever they are, like I said, they were convoluted. They've kind of moved the goalposts on it a few times on national television. But claim that all of them are done, because it sounds like, as far as I can tell, he said the Navy's at the bottom of the ocean. Okay, check. The regime has been changed.
As I said 13 days ago, the Iranians would keep attacking, though. His problem is they're not going to stop now. You understand? Now they never were.
This is the thing. If you're an America First president and your entire premise is we are going to eliminate threats to the United States homeland, then all you do is you eliminate the threats to the United States homeland. Do they have a ballistic capability to reach U.S. Assets? Not if you pull them back. Not if you take them away. We move people into their range and then apparently obliterated their ability to do that. So that should be the end of it. I don't need to have this protracted war. It's going to be absolute chaos for the midterms.
Sure, but you think
the
Iranians will unblock the strait? They're demanding now that they will not unblock it until we leave the Middle East. So you understand they've now told us to surrender.
So what do they say? They say 20% of petroleum and crude oil comes through that strait. That's the claim that I've read. I'm not an expert on petroleum.
It's 27,
movement.
But 25 right now.
And what percent of that ends up in the United States? And what percentage of that
basically
actually affects
none.
Us
it goes
directly?
To China.
Basically
and
none.
India.
So if we're being honest about what this war is about, which is what people have asked about.
Blow it up and then say, we did our aim, you guys handle it, fine. And then China and India will pressure them to open it. If we just leave.
They would have to, of course. Because
that makes sense.
That's I mean, at the end of the day,
well, Trump's being counseled now that he's got to open it up. But I agree with what you just said. That's a Jedi mind trick. No, we had our interest. We're not endorsing it, but now we're here. Take out the missiles. We're done.
Yeah, declare victory wherever you want. You've already set the terms. There have been multiple terms. You can declare victory on all of those things. If you're going to make it about oil going through a strait, it hurts other countries far more than the United States. If they've already said, and they've already gone out and messaged, it's going to be short-term pain, long-term gain.
No oil out of it.
Yeah. And apparently we were already seizing oil out of Venezuela. So it's just kind of funny. Venezuela and Iran both appear to be direct strikes to let China know that we mean business. And it'd be nice if you messaged that out loud. I guess maybe you can't do that, but fine. Americans can look through it and see it. Then let them put the pressure on if you're worried about the Strait opening up.
Well, exactly. The people that do nothing but hate Israel, which I don't like what Israel does either, but the obsessing on it, when I'm like, this is about the IMEC corridor. It's about cutting off Belt and Road. It's about a message to China. So is Venezuela. They go, you shut up. You're cutting off for Israel. No, there's other interest involved as well. Yes, Israel drug us into it.
Yeah, the Chinese are the biggest geopolitical threat to America, both on the economic front, both on the counterintelligence front, and the possibility of cyber attacks and all the other things. But as long as we're screwing around in Iran, you open up the Chinese to be able to do their attacks on U.S. infrastructure, and they can say that it came from Iran, because it's really easy to hide things in the cyber world. It gets very convoluted and muddy.
Spoof.
So if you want to give an open gate for the Chinese to do whatever kind of weird things they might want to do, just to screw with us, just to kind of like let us know that we're there, saber rattle, they can make those things happen when you have it open. It becomes a little bit more obvious it's the Chinese if we're not actively dropping bombs on Tehran. So, you know, end of the day, I don't see any victory for it. And let's talk about the political end of it, because this is going to be chaotic. Here's something I discovered the other day on accident, Alex, and this is always one of those weird moments. I've been hammering on a thing called Agenda 47 on my podcast for about a month and a half. And that is Donald Trump's 20 core promises to the American people, how he was going to make America great. And all of them involve things that I'm into, like with maybe a few exceptions that just sort of don't apply to me. But a lot of it was making America affordable, lowering inflation, keeping us out of wars, being, peace in the Middle East, all the things that he campaigned on that he said for the 2+ years leading up to his election. It's like, yeah, we want that. We'll evaluate you based on your own promises. And what they did that I think is so wild is that this was listed on a website, donaldjtrump.com/platform and donaldjtrump.com/agenda47. I have the graphic over here on my desktop.
No, I remember. I always have it available. We covered it at the time.
Here's what's crazy. It's gone. And it's gone as of February 28th, the day that we started the bombing campaign in Iran.
Wow, they didn't know this thing down. He made a huge deal about, you know, I'm not the Heritage Foundation plan.
That's right.
I'm this plan, and now they pulled that. Wow. He gave speeches endorsing that.
Exactly. You can go and you can see it on the Internet Archives. If you go back to the Wayback Machine, you find. And I did a whole thing on it on a podcast, and I showed it so that people could understand what I'm talking about. But it just disappeared. And so I was like, where the hell did this thing go? Because I wanted to send a link to somebody who was asking me, you keep referring to this document. What is this
document? Yeah, that's like the Project for New American Century, Rebuilding America's Defenses. In April before 9/11, said we need 3,000 dead, a big attack on the homeland to launch this and take over these Middle Eastern countries. They pulled that after it as well. Very suspicious.
It's the last update was on February the 27th. On February 28th, it goes away and it becomes a redirect to a Trump merch site. And you can just see on the actual screen that people are looking at, right?
So you know, they're it says erasing number 3. The old, this was Trump's platform. This is his platform. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and it's so also headline. Trump just erased his 2024 election platform from the internet. Wow. And we're supposed to just say, well, it's okay. No. Why do you think Trump, starting with getting rid of Musk and not helping the whistleblowers, you didn't want your job back, but others did.
Yeah.
What, it was a sudden turn like 10, 11 months ago, about 3-4 months of the administration. It just suddenly started veering. What did that?
I don't know what did it. I think Elon Musk found out all the fraud that was done there. At least he had an instinct of it. You lift up the rug and you realize. So we did the same thing with the FBI's prohibited access files. We kind of read. You think that there's maybe some shady things. You think you're going to turn over a rock and see some creepy crawlies underneath there. And what happens if you turn over the rock and you see that it's a portal to an entire another city that's just operating on its own? I mean, I think that's what essentially goes on in government. That if you start looking further and further, you're like, it's not that there's some fraud. It's that the majority of what this entity is fraudulent.
Exactly. Everything else is just camouflage or a coat of paint. Our world is the facade. The fraud is the real world.
That's it. I mean, those are very Matrix types analogies. But at the end of the day, most of what Trump's 20 promises were
trials,
domestic agenda.
I thought they were literally all show trials. I didn't learn until the second one when I saw the judge with the same script as the first one. And I realized, oh, that's a script, what I wasn't allowed to say. And all choreographed. And I was like being made to play in a theater thing.
Yeah, like the Truman Show.
It was like totally fake. Yeah.
Yeah, you were Truman.
But I was the only Truman there. Figuring out, oh, I'm in a show.
That's right. I mean, you've been a canary for a lot of this stuff, and it doesn't, like, I think my mother-in-law gets really grouchy about some of the things that you've said or what they think, and it's like, first of all, you probably don't know what he actually said. Second of all, you bought into the media production, and so you're mad at Alex Jones, but the answer is how Alex Jones is treated tells you what the state of American liberty is in a lot of ways, and I felt the same way, you know, in a smaller capacity, when we went out and brought out whistleblower agenda, we said, look, it made it on Trump's agenda, end the weaponization of government. Does anyone think that this government won't turn and pivot on a dime the next time you get a quote-unquote Democrat in? Because I think they will. And so whenever I see them pull down that platform.
They're already pivoting on you and me and Flynn. Flynn confirmed it from the Pentagon. They've told him they are building files on us.
I have no doubt.
Right now.
I mean, I know for here's how I know, Alex. I'm the only one that I know that's been pulling at this particular thread of Agenda 47. I'm the only person that I've seen, and I watch other podcasts. I see all the other clips. Not a single person is saying, here's Trump's 20 pieces that he wants us to grade him on, and I can grade him on it. That's really simple. That's not me creating this document. They created it. If number 8 is prevent World War III and restore peace in Europe and Middle East, like, then that's what number 8 is, if you're doing the opposite of it. And then number 3 was about how you're going to end inflation and make America affordable again. Well, I'm looking at diesel prices right down the street for me at $4.50 a gallon, when within the last like 2 weeks they were under $3 a gallon. So you've added almost 50% to my cost to fill up my truck. And so these are real homegrown American issues.
Who, I'm not even defending. I know how he works. He means well. Now he's figuring out. He's trying to pull out. And you're like, dude, they're not going to let you pull out. But I agree. Let them have their problem, and then China and India will make them open it. Really smart, Kyle Serafin. You got a lot of great websites. Where's the best place to find you?
People should check out KyleSerafinShow.com. That's the easiest one. It's Spotify. It gets video and audio. We did some good talking about it today, yesterday as well. But occasionally you accidentally stumble on these things where you realize someone is watching what you're doing. And, you know, my audience is not nearly the size of your audience, but somebody in either the White House or in the administration went like, this guy's banging on about this thing. We should probably pull it off the web. We don't want people to go there and look at it. And the fact of the matter is the internet's forever.
No, I remember weeks ago catching you talking about it, but I didn't know I get it. I kind of missed the forest for the trees. They pulled it in response to you, obviously.
I suspect so. I mean, I know the FBI keeps an eye on what I'm doing, so it's not surprising it went somewhere else. Anyway, end of the day, the domestic agenda was going to win him the presidency in the first place. It's going to win him the midterms if it has the even potential of doing that. But there's nothing about like an expeditionary war or sending 5,000 Marines in that's going to make Donald Trump any more popular to anybody in the United States, regardless of what the online chatter or the MAGA bots or whatever the social media buzz is. Real people don't want that. They just want their gas prices to go down.
Nobody. They're not drafting my sons and daughters. Kyle Serafin, come on next week for 2 hours. Let's do a deep dive. Great job. Thank you, sir.
Bet.
We got a big guest coming up, folks. Hollywood and Satanism. The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control, but because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have Dodge for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
RFK Jr. shocked many when he sat down for a meal with Fox's Sean Hannity.
The pair dined at fast food chain Steak and Shake, eating burgers and fries in a bid to highlight the chain's switch to frying their food in beef tallow, which is a healthier alternative to traditionally used seed oils.
I am so excited. After over a year, we have the highest quality private labeled beef tallow out there. You've heard RFK Jr. rave about it, the health effects, how good it is. This sucker is boom heavy. This is high quality. It is very competitively priced, and it funds this whole operation. It is optimal human beef tallow, grass-fed from thealexjonesstore.com. It is night and day compared to all these other fats and all these trans fats and all of the seed oils that are so toxic, especially when you heat them. Not this. It is so good. It is now available, discounted, at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Well, Roger Avery, Canadian-American film director, screenwriter, and producer, best known for Academy Award-winning collaboration with Quentin Tarantino, screenplay Pulp Fiction, and more, has just blown people away with his expose on the satanic death cult, and from my research, he's dead on. You are. He's joining us when a bunch of stations join us in about 5 minutes. Here's part of John Bowne's latest report. We'll come back with Roger Avery. Stay with us.
It was unheard of for a sitting American president
to file a lawsuit against a news outlet. This never happened before until President Trump returned to office for a second term. But now he has sued the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and as of this morning, the BBC.
President Trump. Domestic propaganda has been the bane of your existence.
Obama repealed the 1948 Smith-Mundt Act, which then permitted propaganda to be in broadcasting. It no longer said that it had to be credible.
Inevitably, Obama's Orwellian Smith-Mundt Modernization Act will be amended or repealed. We are going on nearly 15 years of its implementation, and mainstream media has become nothing short of an enemy of the people. But you knew that. Case in point, in the heart of New York City, outside the opulent Gracie Mansion, American patriots led by J6 prisoner Jake Lang gathered to sound the alarm on the creeping Islamic influence under Mayor Zohran Mamdani's regime.
An explosive device with bolts and screws was thrown into a crowd. It happened in New York City on Saturday during a protest that turned violent outside the mayor's official residence.
New York City got extremely lucky yesterday. TATP is enormously volatile. It is not very stable. It's extremely powerful. And it is the footprint, and if you go by past events, of serious bombing attacks. The London 7-7 attacks, Richard Reed's attempt on a plane. Many of us remember the Ariana Grande attacks outside the Manchester Arena. These are situations where you're well into double figures of people killed, never mind injured.
Instead of condemning the barbaric attack, Mayor Mamdani, a self-proclaimed progressive Muslim template, doubled down on vilifying Lang as a white supremacist.
This was a vile protest rooted in white supremacy entitled Stop the Islamic Takeover of New York City. I'm the first Muslim mayor of our city. Anti-Muslim bigotry is nothing new to me, nor is it anything new for the 1 million or so Muslim New Yorkers who know this city as our home.
The mainstream media echo chamber followed suit, amplifying smears against American patriots and populism.
Authorities say they were part of a group of nearly 125 people counter-protesting a much smaller anti-Islam demonstration led by Jake Lang.
The violent
pardon U.S. Capitol insurrectionist who has frequently sought out political confrontations in the months after President Trump gave him clemency. In a statement, Mayor Zohran Mamdani is saying, quote, yesterday, white supremacist Jake Lang organized a protest outside Gracie Mansion rooted in bigotry and racism.
Obama's CIA media monstrosity uses many tools in their propaganda toolbox. One of those is called minimized framing, where certain aspects of a story, event, or issue are deliberately downplayed, underemphasized, or minimized in the framing process. This allows acts of terror, sedition, or treason to carry on toward their goal. CNN recently illustrated minimized framing in stark detail, posting about two jihadist terrorists as if their innocent lives took an unexpected turn on a lovely warm day in New York City. CNN had to redact and apologize. Another tool is outright lying.
Two Republicans say Muslims don't belong here after an attempted terror attack against New York's mayor, Zohran Mamdani, and the House Speaker, Mike Johnson, says nothing really to condemn those comments. I incorrectly said that the bombs that were thrown by ISIS-inspired suspects in New York over the weekend were directed at Mayor Mamdani.
Look, propaganda, there's government, there's corporate, you name it. But the good news is, because of X and a few independent places, we can challenge this now. They definitely want to clash the civilizations. Our huge guest, Roger Avery, straight ahead. You don't want to miss this. Share the live feeds now. We'll be right back. The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control, but because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have guys for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations, so I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultramethylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at thealexhomestore.com.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen right here on The Alex Jones Show.
As you know, I don't like much of Hollywood. They don't make really anything that good, in my opinion, compared to what they used to, because they just are churning it out, but not Roger Avery. I mean, when I start going over the list of films, like, that's one of my favorites. 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 Pulp Fiction, Beowulf, the list goes on and on. His writing is amazing because, at an instinctive level, it connects with us. And so, he's with us for about an hour and a half. We're very blessed to have him, and he said some really great topics. Recent movies is predictive programming, for example, Civil War and Leave the World Behind. The Obamas helped produce that. Iranians taking Los Angeles, or is it part of a larger PSYOP? AI filmmaking, Ignorance is Bliss, films about forgiveness, the rights return or attempt to return to Hollywood in an effort to regain the lost soft power. And we're going to just talk about a bunch of other subjects with him. So Roger, I was really captivated, and I love Joe, good friends with him. But to be captivated by your interview, I never watched his interviews twice. I watched it twice over a couple of days working out because I just wanted to, because everything you said was, I knew was accurate, but also it taught me a lot of things. And I wanted to ask you to talk about yourself, your journey, how you discovered that this Satanism really is a underpinning of so much of what's going on, where you think it's going, kind of your 35,000 foot view, and then you've got the floor to go through these topics, starting with predictive programming. But again, thank you. Thank you so much for being here with us. Find you on X at Avery, A-V-A-R-Y, and Avery.com. So Roger Avery, thank you so much.
Thank you.
First of all, you really summarized everything that's on my mind right now and that I'm thinking about and that I'm noticing, not just in Hollywood, but in the world in general. And, secondly, I want to tell you that, when people found out that I was coming on your show, I suddenly started receiving calls like, don't do it. Be cautious. You're going to get blackballed or whatever. That actually made me want to go on it more.
By the way, did this start only 2 hours ago? Because I was writing the show headline and almost didn't put Roger Avery in it because a lot of times guests don't come on because I announce right away, but then they get a bunch of calls.
Yeah, yeah. I got the usual calls from the usual cast of characters. You know, people trying to calm the narrative, I guess. And but you know, I've been a fan of yours for a really long time. I mean, to be honest, I've been a fan of yours since I think it was Waking Life that you were in. And I was like, who is that guy? And then when I started researching you and discovering you and then watching you over the years and realizing this guy, you know, speaks his mind. He speaks the truth as he sees it, the testimony of his eyes. And you take arrows like crazy and you remain steadfast and, I look at you as, I mean, somebody I think in your last segment said, you know, that you're the canary. What they mean is you're the canary in the coal mine. You're the guy on the, you know, in the trenches on the front lines, you know, speaking your beliefs. And there you go. I love this scene. And actually, I'm a big Linkletter fan. I mean, Linkletter, I'm glad to hear that. I didn't know what your relationship was like with him after all these years and everything, but, you know, I think Rick is, of all the filmmakers out there right now of my generation, I think he's the best. I think he's the best of us and that he represents the best of us. I think he takes the greatest risks of any of us.
There's a dirty side of Hollywood. He's the opposite. Just baseball, America, apple pie, a true classic liberal. Just a classy, just totally real guy.
Well, you know, it's crazy because we're right now in the Academy season and, or the award season, I guess, as you might call it. And, I think the Academy Awards are Sunday. I never watched the Academy Awards. In fact, I resigned from the Academy, a couple of years back. And, one thing I did notice was of all these movies that are listed, and I think there's, some, you know, interesting movies made this year, more so than recent years past. But, I noticed that one movie was missing, glaringly missing for me, and that was his film Nouvelle Vague. And I don't know if you've seen it, but it's about the making of Breathless. And I think this is hands down, without question, absolutely the best movie of the year. And it's completely ignored by, the Academy. But then we have to ask ourselves, what is the Academy? Like, what is this organization? And it's a, and what are these awards? And what was the original purpose of these awards? And, I mean, you know, I entered this industry very naive and loving movies and believing in movies. And I look at the cinema experience as a kind of near sacred congregation. You know, you sit in a dark theater, you're sitting next to someone you don't even know who is, maybe completely different than you, you know, the different race, creed, religion, like everything is different about them. And yet you're sitting there next to this person in the dark and you're both sharing this kind of ecstatic waking dream, looking at little stained glass windows projected on the screen. And
we know humans are psychically connected. Princeton's now measured it with devices. So it's really a communal psychic experience.
Yeah, it's a congregational experience. And I think it takes us back to church and even before church, you know, back to the campfire where we're just sitting in the dark of night, telling each other stories of our myths and traditions, just trying to get through the night. And so there's this really important quality about being next to someone, a real person, again, someone you don't know, and sharing this kind of invisible bodily electricity together as you share this waking dream. And
it's an incredible communion. It's an incredible communion.
It's an incredible communion, and it's a really important aspect of our culture. And I really believe that there are dark forces that kind of wish to separate
us. That's what the lockdowns were about. I mean, they wanted to make us depressed and isolated.
Yeah, divide us up, lock us up into a room. You're a slave to some subscription service, and you're watching things alone, and then they can control the programming individually to you. And over the years, I've kind of watched as movies have transformed and changed, and maybe it's a function of my becoming older and seeing the world more. Because when I was young, as I said, I was naive when I entered into this business. I almost approached it like a surrealist. You know, I came in just believing that movies were about creative expression. I always knew that there was a certain amount of, I think we can call it corporate propaganda because it's show business, but there was usually an equal part of personal propaganda. And you would have filmmakers, you know, putting their messages about humanism and about culture.
So it was a trade-off. You know, you knew what you were doing, but it was still a trade-off.
There was something of a balance. And also the corporations, you knew that they were just a slave to money. They just want to make money. That's the business part of it. You know, the show part was usually something else. And just over the years, I feel like, honestly, because the technologies have changed, the medium itself has transformed. We've gone from film, which is an absolutely separate medium from digital projection or digital filmmaking. And I'm not saying I'm not trying to create an argument where one is better than the other necessarily. I'm just saying they are different. They're as different as oil paint and watercolor paint, you know, oil and water, completely separate. And yet they're both paint. Except,
well,
you know,
one is so, just to dumb it down, one is so disposable because it's so quick and there's so much of it. Just going back to film, because I was involved, like you were before me, literally 3/4-inch tape, very precious, you know, with film, 35mm, didn't have any money, could only shoot it one time, had to get it right.
Yeah.
And so there was something magic about that. It was limited to capture this. It made it so much more powerful. Now with digital, you over and over again, and you think that would make them do more takes. We now learn they're doing less because they don't even give a shit. It's like they're not pouring their soul into
cut.
It.
They don't even cut in between takes. Because, you know, the video you just run, well, first of all, directors now, they'll delete takes like they're deleting an email. Like there's no real respect for the moment. We used to say, I'll see you in the moment. And what the moment was after all this intense preparation on set and getting everything just right, and the actors are off in their trailer or if in a room somewhere, you know, running their lines in their head and getting ready. There was all this like excitement built up, and then you would get there in front and then you start hearing the camera running, and you know that you're spending like 4 cents every frame, and as it's whipping through the camera, and you know that you're burning money in that moment. And in that moment, you suddenly pop into another reality and you perform. And
because it's do or die. I mean, I've not been involved in film like you have
it.
But maybe take Linkletter. When we did Waking Life and the computers were crashing later and they had trouble, you know, doing it rotoscope back then. It's so easy now. But I remember later they called me down when they were actually going to pick the scenes because he said, just say whatever you want. And the first take, he goes, that's so good. I usually do at least 3 takes because it's extreme. He goes, do it one more time. And then they sat there in between all their being busy 6 months later. He calls me and he goes, I want you to sit here and, you know, look at this. Which one do you think? Because we spent days watching these 2 takes. We think it's this one, but what do you? And I said, yeah, it's obviously that one. But they still spent days just deciding, even though they already knew the first take, which was stream of consciousness unedited, was the one. They still spent 2 days watching it and asking other people. Now, like you said, they don't even give a shit. It's totally changed.
Well, you know, it's funny. The people look at Waking Life and you think, oh, it's just computer graphics and it's like a filter, but it's not. That movie was, you know, the Rotoshop process was developed by a guy named Bob Savastan, who was probably sitting there with you at that time.
I remember he was there. He was actually there. Yeah.
Yeah. They
Tommy Pallotta.
Paint. It's all the hand of man is over every single frame of that. And I think that, you know, as filmmakers, we're constantly trying to capture dreams on, because a movie is like being able to look inside of someone else's mind and to see their dreams. When I watch a movie by Kubrick, I'm watching Kubrick's dreams on screen. And with this movie, he captured dreams better than most. And many have tried. You know, Polanski does dreams very, very well, but But Waking Life in particular, I think, was just such an amazing experience of and such an experimental film. And right now you're showing a Scanner Darkly, which was his other movie done like this, which, I mean, I just think Linklater, through the years, you know, with what was the movie Boyhood, and where, you know, he's shooting it over a long periods of time, he's doing stunts in movies that we just, you know, you dream about doing these kind of things as a filmmaker, and he is consistently doing it, whether he succeeds or fails, you know, at the box office, because, you know, sometimes your movies don't work with a general audience at first. You know, he's always trying these amazing stunts. And this film that he's recently done, Nouvelle Vague, which is about the French New Wave of filmmakers, what I loved about it is that it was completely disconnected from any of the politics of our time right now, or of any of the our current issues. And it is a movie that is purely about cinema and what it means to become a filmmaker and the evolution of Godard as he was becoming a director, and the, you know, how everybody views you as you're doing it, and the kind of approach you take to, you know, toward making a movie. And
so they're just examining a topic instead of trying to make it political.
He's not making it political at all. I mean, there may be some kind of politics in the movie, but what he's doing is he's really analyzing the French New Wave filmmakers and putting it all into context. And I learned things. I mean, I've studied, I've worked in France. I've made two films in France. I'm friends with all sorts of French filmmakers. I've read about the French New Wave. And I'm watching the movie and just seeing how he put the whole thing into context. I think it's one of the best movies about movie making that I've ever seen. And, for it to be completely just, you know, brushed aside, by the Academy and not considered just reminds me of what a joke the Academy Awards are.
Would you say it's because he's not a toady and not part of Hollywood and just lives out in Bastrop at his ranch?
I mean, that might be part of it. It's difficult to say, because he's also made movies that are, like School of Rock. That may have been a very personal film for him, but it's also a very audience accessible, you know, movie that's for.
Or Days of Confused was about him growing up in Texas. It's personal, but everybody likes it.
Yeah. And so he has this innate ability that, you know, is, and he sometimes makes movies like, what was it called? Was it called Flags of Your Fathers? I'm trying to remember. Okay. This movie almost has no cinema in it. You know, like, it's just him literally shooting, because he knows he's mature enough to know when to step back, when to not let his ego get in the way of the movie itself. And so he in many ways serves the artistic, you know, statement that he's making, and he's had enough success.
I agree. Rick is so humble, and it's not fake. It's like, he's like Obi-Wan Kenobi, like a servant.
Yeah, and I only know him, like, lightly. I've only met him a few times, but I admire him more than anyone of my generation right now. I think he's the guy, like, that, you know, when you look at his body of work and you look at the statements that he's made about humanity and who we are as a culture, like, he's a really important filmmaker. He's maybe the most important American filmmaker there is, from my perspective.
Well, and Roger Avery,
and I think this movie that he's made is as, you know, as important to cinema. It's like it's almost as if Godard were making a dramatic movie about the making of his movie while he was making the movie. And Rick went out, and my understanding is that they shot it on 16, just in Paris, you know, with everybody in costume and everything. But, you know, Paris is modern now, and you've got, like, you know, dozens of cars in the background, and that they just kind of used digital lightly to change the background to make Paris, to make it look like how it used to look. And he absolutely captures one. I mean, as I was watching the movie, my wife, I'm not sure she enjoyed it as much as I did, but she was watching it and she was like, I don't know if I can enjoy this because I feel like I've lived this. Like, I watched you go through that exact same process. And so for anybody wanting to learn about movies, the history of cinema, the, what it means to be a director, and what you have to go through to make a film, this is the movie. And so, I mean, I love it partly because I'm a filmmaker and, you know, it's of interest to me. So maybe it's not going to connect with
the reality of it.
I can't believe that the Academy, you know, would ignore this movie as they have, and to show other films which are, you know, successful movies, like, you know, for example, Sinners. I can understand why that movie made money and, you know, why a general audience really ate it up. But I look at it and I'm like, okay, well, that's like From Dusk Till Dawn, you know, so like From Dusk Till Dawn. I don't really see it being too much different from that film. I prefer From Dusk Till Dawn, because I like Robert Rodriguez as a filmmaker, but, it just looks like a repeat to me. And so for this movie to garner like all the nominations that it's garnered, I'm like, what's really going on here? And then we just have to remind ourselves, what is the Academy Awards? Why did they start the Academy Awards? And the reason was, is because they, you know, around this time of the year, you want to get a little bit more juice out of your box office and you want to kind of, you know, punch the gas a little. And so you remind everybody and you say, oh, this is the best film. And then, you know, it makes a little bit more money.
So it's purely exploitive instead of making about the art form that made it popular to begin with. We got 4 minutes to break.
It has nothing to do with best picture. That's a ludicrous term to make for that awards show to make. I mean, even look, I won an Academy Award for Pulp Fiction, and I personally, you know, love Pulp Fiction. But when you look at the other movies that we were up against at that time, I mean, Forrest Gump and the Kieślowski film, and I mean, Ed Wood, these other movies were extraordinary. I mean, I personally, think Ed Wood was my favorite film of that year. Again, it's another movie about movie making and in black and white. Maybe this is a thing.
But I think you were too close to your creation. Pulp Fiction was totally new and also exposed a lot of undercurrent that was real and just really hit people. Like nothing ever been made like that. So it was truly avant-garde.
Well, you know, it's funny because one of the things that it was the structure of the movie was one of the reasons people were considering it so avant-garde in the moment, so timely. A lot of it is Quentin's execution of the film and how he approached the material. Because the actual structure, you know, when you look at, I mentioned Kieślowski before, he had done a film called Three Colors, you know, Red, White, and Blue, with Juliette Binoche, and Julie Delpy was in white, and then Irene Jacob was in red. And these movies are doing the same thing. They're three separate films where you can see in the background the other films taking place. They're all taking place at the same time. There are three movies about one movie. There was also the Jim Jarmusch movie, Mystery Train, which came out at that time, which, these are all, like, happening right at the same moment. Mystery Train, you know, it's three stories that take place in this hotel, and you can hear this gunshot going off that you can use to synchronize the time within those three stories. And so it was kind of like, you know, an idea whose time had come. And what really makes Pulp Fiction, I think, special was, you know, I mean, Quentin's voice as a director. You know, he brought a very populist approach to the film, and he is, you know, he as a film viewer and as a filmmaker, he always goes for what is proven. I think he studies films and he figures out what is proven. What does the audience love? What does he love? And then he executes it. And some people say that's copying, but you know, what it really is when you're a young filmmaker, you look to your parent filmmakers. You look to your cinematic forefathers.
Well, civilization is building on what was best and innovating and making it better. That's what it is.
Yeah, well, like, you know, when you're a child, you look to your parents and then you copy and you learn how to be. And then at a certain point, you kind of learn how to walk on your own. And, you know, with Pulp Fiction, he's looking to his cinematic forefathers. He's looking to, I mean, at that time, De Palma, Scorsese, like there's a whole group of them that are like Quentin's parents. And that are, you know, and there's, from my perspective as a filmmaker and somebody who worked on Pulp Fiction, there's a bunch of filmmakers that I look to who were my parents. I mean, that shot right there of Bing Rames walking across the street, that's from Psycho. That's taken directly from Psycho. He's walking across the street. He looks into the car. He sees, like, you know, that happens in Psycho. And I wrote it because I like that scene in Psycho.
Amazing. So, Roger Avery, stay there. I want to come back and get into current predictive programming, all the Satanism stuff on Joe Rogan. Incredible. It's amazing to have you. Listen to you all day. This is riveting radio.
My pleasure.
TV. Wow. And you can find him online at Avery.com and at Avery on X. I'm Alex Jones. Back in a few minutes. Stay with us. The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have guys for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy ultra-methylene blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March mega sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, methylene blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Introducing Ultra DNA Revival, the advanced daily supplement designed to help you feel and perform at your absolute best, starting at the cellular level. Backed by cutting-edge mitochondrial and DNA support science, Ultra DNA Revival delivers noticeable all-day energy without stimulants or crashes, faster recovery and greater endurance, sharper focus and mental clarity, support for healthy blood sugar levels, stronger immune system function, enhanced liver health and natural detoxification, reduces everyday stress and anxiety, protection against oxidative stress and the visible signs of aging. And again, this is a private label of an already best-selling brand that found this. Thousands of customers report feeling the difference in as little as 7 to 14 days. Right now, take advantage of our best pricing ever. VIP members, $34.95. Regular, $59.59. Save over 40% with a VIP membership for $30 a month. Experience the revival your body has been waiting for. Secure your DNA revival today at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Alex Jones, patriot. A man they tried to silence. They came for his voice, his platform, his life. But they can't stop him. Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's most unstoppable force. Alex Jones will be that man. Better than he was before. Better. Stronger. Faster. Louder.
Go to AlexJonesApp.com, the number one news app in the world.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
That's the amazing sound score from Beowulf that this guy made. What a great animated film. I love it. Roger Avery is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. And there we are. We are Beowulf. That's from years ago. And Roger Avery reposted. So he's here with us. I got so much to talk to him about here. And I want to get into predictive programming and movies and you know, all of it, the stuff he wants to get into. But obviously, I was already a fan of yours, followed your work, didn't know you were aware of my show and liked it. And then I see you on Joe Rogan, and I kind of watch it, listen in the car and here and there. And I said, I got to just get on the treadmill and watch the whole thing. And I did. Lost probably 5 pounds doing it. But just amazing, because everything you were saying, I mean, I knew was accurate, and almost no one else is saying it. But then I wanted you to be able to go on with more about how you knew it. So back to what I said at the start of the interview, and we went off into Linklater, which was great, and real filmmaking.
But, yeah, sorry about that.
But no, it was great. No, I'm glad we did it, because I've experienced it, you know, lived it. So it's my own experience. You kind of answered, you said, you know, early on, you were just approaching it from your own perspective, hadn't been in the deep end yet. But how did you learn about predictive programming? How did you learn about the Satanism? How did you, and now you're on the biggest show in the world, Joe Rogan, talking about it. I mean, that was a big move. I mean, or maybe you talked about it before. What's the process there?
Well, I mean, several things happened. A lot of it is, a lot of these, I mean, there were a number of WikiLeaks dumps that, you know, that occurred. And one of them was about, Sony Pictures. And I started investigating and, you know, reading all of the documents that were suddenly available. And it was like, suddenly I realized, oh, like, why didn't anybody tell me that's what the film industry is? And I, it was one of those things I always kind of, I think I understood, like, you know, one can think of Hollywood as being the propaganda wing of our government. But something happened over the course of, and it was probably during the Biden presidency, where I started, you know, looking around and I started, you know, realizing that there was this kind of echo chamber in Hollywood. And I just definitely was not part of that. And then this most recent, revelation, with the, all of the Epstein papers, coming out. And, you know, I started reading those as well. And then, you know, with what happened with COVID and, you know, and I had been working on a script about this, virologist in Manitoba, in Winnipeg. And I was writing a screenplay about her, and she's a Chinese virologist who was the person who had developed the inoculations for leprosy. And it was a huge success, big, huge success. You know, Chinese company is manufacturing all that stuff in California. And I was writing a story kind of about, you know, what it's like to be a rock star and you have a hit and then you're looking for your next hit. And I started noticing that, and there was all these articles that have since been, you know, somewhat suppressed. I think it was in the Winnipeg Free Press, where, or City Press, and, where she had been caught by the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, shipping various copyrighted viruses like, you know, Hanta and, you know, all of them.
Which, by the way, appeared to be souped up versions.
Yeah, souped up versions, and they were shipping them directly from Winnipeg to Wuhan on Air Canada freight. And then the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, you know, there's all the, you know, they have to, you know, everything's published, but they've redacted who her financier was. And when I started doing the research on it, I realized, well, it's one of three people, and those guys are the obvious people who you would think. And then suddenly I started realizing this is really nefarious. And then when COVID hit and they left the Kowloon Bridge open on purpose, you know, during Chinese New Year when this was happening, you know, just kind of allowing everybody to flow out. And, you know, all the stuff that was happening during that time, it was like, this is intentional. This is, you know, the first time it's happenstance, the second time it's coincidence, the third time it's enemy attack. And I started realizing, oh, we're under enemy attack. And then the way our own local California government was behaving at that time, how they were, you know, quarantining people on army bases, but then allowing people to go in and out of those quarantine areas. It was almost like no one is that stupid. And, yeah, that was her. And so I was writing a script about her. And so I started realizing no one is that stupid. This is intentional. We're intentionally doing this. And then everything just kind of, and look at this ridiculousness that we went through as a culture. And this was so, it hammered on us and damaged us so badly. And then I started realizing, because I'm a movie guy, that, you know, that there were clues. There was the Soderbergh movie that had come out, Contagion, where basically they are talking about their, you know, is it cautionary? Are they cautioning us that this is going to happen? Or are they preparing us that it's going to happen through revelation of the method?
And then the documents come out that it was psychological warfare run by the defense ministries, Canada, the U.S., the U.K., to scare us to create this new civilization, to train us for carbon lockdowns in the future. So you, like many others, were already somewhat away, but COVID and all of it with what you already knew was so obvious, and now it's confirmed that pushed you over the edge. And they thought Disease X and all their Rockefeller documents going back 30 years would bring in their world government. Instead, they now admit at Davos, it's destroyed them, it's discredited them, no one believes anything they say now.
Yeah, and thank God. I mean, this was an attack on the people. And I'm one of those people. And so when I, you know, when I kind of realized this and what was going on, and then I started looking around and, you know, all my friends and everybody, they're all just happily getting shots, you know, and now they're just dying left and right. And so when this started happening, I started forming a much heavier distrust of authority. And then I started thinking about it. I started looking at various movies and seeing the patterns and how it happened. And I think the one that I mentioned on Joe Rogan was, Fight Club, made by, you know, a guy who's a commercial director. They hired a guy who makes commercials to make a big commercial that is effectively selling what's going to happen. And the movie itself is a manifesto. You know, it's a manifesto about bringing down the financial system, and, you know, the buildings all collapse. And when you look at what happened 1 year after Fight Club came out, it was 9/11. And then you start looking at, well, who produced Fight Club? And that was Arnon Milchan. And Arnon has openly admitted, this is not me saying it, this is him saying it, that, you know, he's a Mossad guy. He's a Mossad agent. And that, and an arms dealer. That's what Fincher used to call him, was, my movie was produced by an arms dealer, like jokingly. And so then I start looking at Arnon Milchan's other movies. And he did this movie called Medusa Touch with George C. Scott. I think Lee Remick is in it. And in that movie, again, airplanes are crashing into buildings. And, so then I think I mentioned on Joe Rogan that at one point very early in my career, I had been through John Milius, brought in on a little DOD weekend where we were all going to get together, and they got a bunch of writers together, and they put us in a little tiny ballroom type thing in Long Beach, and we all wrote scenarios for how to attack Los Angeles under the guise of this is if we come up with ideas on how to attack Los Angeles, we can come up with preventions for it, which sounds good to me. But again, I was young and naive at that time, and as I look back on that, I realize how nefarious that was. And now,
by the way, because I remember articles 20 years ago that even came out, I'm kind of jumping the gun, I don't know if this is what you say you're saying, where it turned out they were telling top writers, maybe it had been you they're talking about, at these DOD-funded camps where you thought you were fighting terror, that they were actually going to use that for scenarios for training and or false flags.
That's exactly what it was. And so I was, when I started putting all this together in my head and realizing what a useful idiot I had been, throughout much of my career.
They got a top writer, one of the best in the world, for free, writing them scripts for stuff they want to either psychologically say or do.
Yeah, effectively for free. And so that was kind of like a third eye opened up in my head, and I started realizing all of this. And this was also at a time where I started approaching my faith in a much deeper way, and my belief in God in a much deeper way. Like, there it is, 9/11 So this is the revelation of the method where
2 years before they did it on The Simpsons and everywhere.
And
people ask how I predicted it. It was a lot of things that the media saying Bin Laden's going to hit us and all this. I knew the FBI had helped bomb the World Trade Center in 92. I interviewed Ahmad Salam. So I had all this data, but then I started having nightmares of the towers on fire being blown up, and it was the collective unconscious. It wasn't that my unconscious was more powerful than my conscious. So I just said, they're going to blow the World Trade Center, they're going to blame Bin Laden, they're going to fly planes into it. And I didn't even know that right around the time I was doing that, because I didn't watch a lot of TV, they had a lone gunman, X-Files reboot, where the government hijacks a jumbo jet, a small group, to fly to the World Trade Center to go to war in the Middle East, in Afghanistan. And then I got a few years later contacted by Chris Carter, by some of the people on the show, never met him in person, but talked to an email on the phone, and they said, listen, the CIA came to us at parties and said sometimes, you want to do a story on this. So instead of Chris Carter writing a story for them, they came and gave him the idea. And people, when I talked about it, said, that's a lie. They talked to Carter, and he goes, no, Alex Jones is a good guy. He's not a racist like they say. This is like 2016. He goes, and that did happen. So, again, how crazy is that?
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, it seems like a lot of people, when you get to a certain level, you start having a handler. You start having a CIA handler, and I got to know mine. And he's a pretty nice guy.
Wow, tell me about this. Tell us about this.
Well, I'll tell you about this and other things. I mean, you know, once you befriend the people of power, let's say, and you start getting on people's radar, at a certain point, it's like, you know what? It doesn't cost anything. Let's put somebody on Avery, and let's watch him. And just make sure that, you know, Avery is, you know, remaining in his predefined frame and not deviating too far from it. And so I there's a group of guys actually, and, you know, to begin with, and, you know, you get to know these people, and, you know, for a while, I was paranoid about it, but then I kind of got used to it, and I realized that, I don't know if I'm still on any list, but, or need to be watched. Probably, you know, more recently, you know, I am, but I get calls from him every now and then, you know, advising me on stuff and saying, hey, you might not want to talk about this. Why not talk about this instead? And, and stuff like that. And,
I remember former NSA and CIA. What was his name? Michael Hayden, in a speech like 10 years ago, goes, we don't spy on bad people. We spy on interesting people.
Yeah, well, and they told me at one point, look, don't try to lose us, because frequently your surveillance will be there to protect you. You know, and he gave me a scenario where this had happened once, where some guy got jumped by a gang and they had to move in to protect their, because they're surveilling
somebody. No, I had the CIA try that with me. They're like, hey, your wife's cheating on you. Here's the hotel. And I'm just like, and I go there and it's happening. I'm like, God, they're like, we want to help you. Now see how the surveillance is good.
But you know, told that story.
Oh God, I'm out of control, folks. But this is how it works. Because we're here to serve you. We're here to serve you. Yeah.
And it's all part of soft power control. You know, I got invited to this dinner that was being thrown by a bunch of like the Palantir guys, and you know, I go to this meal in a private club and in a private room, big private room with a banquet table. And, you know, there's all the people you would imagine would be there. Oh, like there's the Top Gun guys and, oh, you know, there's so-and-so and there's this director. And I was thinking, why am I here? And basically they got up and they made a very good, speech, which was, what happened to, and it was actually Shyam Sankar, the CTO of Palantir, got up and basically made a plea, what happened to the American cinematic universe? And he wrote an essay about this called The American Cinematic Universe. What happened to The Hunt for Red October? You know, Die Hard, these movies that were, supportive, you know, one could say of, you know, Die Hard supportive of law enforcement, even though it kind of makes fun of the FBI and even though it's making fun of like kind of the goofiness of the LAPD and stuff like that. it looks at the individuals of law enforcement and it makes them the heroes of the movie.
I'm gonna say it humanizes them.
And then you look at Hunt for Red October, and it's about a CIA analyst who basically has to like drops himself into the Arctic Ocean to be able to board the submarine so that he can help stop nuclear war, because they're trying to create this handshake between the Russians and the Americans through Sean Connery's submarine captain turning over this submarine. And so this is it's a Tom Clancy novel. And so, this is Hollywood doing what Hollywood did best, which
was... By the way, I knew the CIA manager that gave them the classified info on real things that happened that's based on... That's Steve Pachinik.
Yeah, exactly. And so, it's all of his stuff is based on actual documents and, these scenarios and stuff like that they read. And so, their plea was like, look, we're gathering everybody together because this is what we want to do. We want to regain soft power, because somewhere along the way, soft power got co-opted and taken control over by this other group. And, I have a very powerful director friend who I'm very close to, who kind of was laughing about it. And he said, there's probably a dinner going on in some other room somewhere else in Los Angeles with another group, and they're trying to do the opposite. And he laughed, and he said, oh, you mean like knocking over the apple cart, playfully. And that's when I suddenly realized, oh, my God, there's all these power groups attempting to control narrative. I mean, I always thought movies were just movies.
But that's why really I was told is, when the richest guy in the world at the time, through a whole other meeting about lawsuits like 8 years ago, got me to this thing on this high rise, like Howard Beale Network, and they're in there, and it was off record, so I won't say the names. And they're like, listen, we're actually a good group. We want you to work with us and we'll fix all this. Of course, it was all BS, but it's the same spiel. They're like, we're worried because you keep controlling narratives. We want you to do our narratives. I'm like, no. They said, well, get ready to be sued. And that's what happened.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's all about narrative control, and it's all about capturing the audience and then programming them, because people are very simple, and I think the data was that like a third of the population, and it's probably more now that COVID has happened and fried everybody's pineal gland, calcified it, and everybody's like has limited thinking powers anymore. And it's changed people, but they basically have said now you can control about a third or more now of the audience. Because people are just very basic. They're monkey see, monkey do. If you tell them, if you program them to believe, for example, men or women or a bunch of the DEI stuff, they'll believe it. If you tell them, if you put a non-binary couple, couple on screen, they'll believe it. They'll imitate it. And so you do this enough and people will imitate it. If you put a nuclear family on screen, people will imitate it. People, a certain
amount. And they're giving us stuff that destroys civilization. And that's the thing is, they've broken the social contract to make us more controllable. Like you said, about a third of people are literally robots. We're worried about a robot takeover. We already have it with humans that have become basically robots.
Yeah. And people will, argue for things that are completely illogical, and it's unreal, actually, how people behave. Have I frozen?
No, you're back. You're great. Listen, this is incredible. Please continue on. We're so blessed to have you. It's amazing, Roger. Roger,
and so I saw this movie recently that really pissed me off called Civil War. It was a movie by this British dude, Alex.
Let's
Garland.
Do this, Roger. This is so important. This is so important. Let's reconnect right now. And look, we've got the whole next hour. If you can do it, at least 30 minutes. I want you to, we're going to reconnect with you right now. It has been amazing quality until now. It's actually frozen and your audio is starting to go out. So let's reconnect with Roger Avery right now. This is, you're getting exclusive top Hollywood writer, top producer, top director, like creme de la creme, is telling you all this as he's waking up to it, and we're all waking up to it. I'm telling what's happened to me, and I told personal story that is embarrassing and true. And it's happened other stuff like that. It's crazy. And they're watching everything I do. And then it's like, unknown number. Hey, we're going to send you a link to this hotel. Here it is. Go there. Boom. It's true. And I'm just like, wow. They're like, yeah, we're your friends. Exactly what they told him. And how do you say no to that? I have, but it's like, it's this, it's like God, basically. It's not the equivalent, but like a sub thing. It's like, well, you guys got magic powers. No, they have this surveillance grid. And boy, can it do a lot of stuff for you if you're in the club. You see, and people, a lot of people will go, well, I want to be in this club then. I'm going to do this right now. I mean, my God. But that's what finally pissed Snowden off, is his CIA handler was watching him and his wife bang and telling him about it. And oh yeah, your wife's mad at you right now. And it's just like, that's not your right to do that. And now it's come out that, of course, the Meta glasses, whatever AI flags, they have to watch. And so they have contractors in Kenya watching dudes on the toilet have sex with their wife, you know, spanking their kids, whatever. And like, what do you think these things are? It's a Palantir. It's a crystal ball. It's two-way. Whenever Gandalf walks in and Saruman has got a Palantir, he goes, what are you doing? Sauron can see us through this. He goes, why should we be scared to use it? And the point is, there's this godlike power now, and that's what you're talking about. Please continue, but when did you with Rogan click to your analysis of the spell we're under, the mind control, the Satanism?
Well, it was when I started reading the Epstein documents and I started seeing what was inside of them, and I was shocked and I couldn't believe it. And I started telling people and people don't want to hear it. And so then I went on Rogan and I talked about it, and I talked about, you know, these revelations of that elites at a very high level, and we actually know the basic number of them as well, are doing human trafficking, human rape, and human sacrificing of children because they're the closest to God. And when I like read this, I mean, it's unthinkable. Like, you don't want to believe it. And so I mentioned it on Joe Rogan, but I also mentioned that I was starting an AI company. And what shocked me is after the show, more people wanted to talk about the AI thing, and more people were upset about, you know, that I was starting an AI company than they were about, you know, this nightmare of elites eating babies. And so then I started thinking about why is this happening? Like, and I mean, we've seen people who have spoken about it, who have, you know, who have participated in it and who have left, you know, it's an initiation that you go through to become, it's a confidence initiation that you go through to become part of a team. And that's when I realized that this is not something that's unique to the elites, that human nature involves these kinds of hazing initiations, or else we wouldn't see it happening since childhood. Like, a bunch of boys get together and kill a squirrel or something. If you're not part of that group, if you're the one kid who's not part of it, and you don't, and you recognize that it's morally wrong and you separate yourself from that group, you are now outside of that group. If you're in a fraternity and you don't go through the hazing initiation, which, you know, who knows what that is, you are now outside of that group.
If you don't screw the pig or the goat, you're not in the club.
You know, there was a really great movie. In fact, it's my favorite Ridley Scott movie of recent memory. It's the only movie of his that I really, of his last four or five movies, that I really, really like.
Hold on, stay there. A 2-minute break. Roger Avery. Next hour coming up. Please stay with us.
I'll tell you about it right afterwards.
Yes, sir. Again, amazing interview. You got a top writer, top director here telling you out the cow ate the cabbage. Ed Avery on X, Avery.com. Back in 2 minutes. Everybody, you know, tune in now. This is important. Stay with us. The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have guys for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale. today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy Ultra Methylene Blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, Methylene Blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Our medical grade USP Ultra Methylene Blue, exclusively at TheAlexJonesStore.com, has taken the country by storm. You've seen the rave reviews. All of our guests that have taken it have been blown away. Zen, clarity, focus, like a fog has lifted. It's not a stimulant, but it feels like one with no letdown. But the best part is it's so good for your cells, so good for your mitochondria. It's incredible. Now we have it in sealed capsules with organic vitamin C to supercharge it as well. Get a 1 month supply so you can travel with it. Talk to your physicians before you take it because it's very, very powerful. It can interact with some drugs. But after you've done your research, get your Ultra Methylene Blue either in liquid or now in capsules exclusively at TheAlexJonesStore.com and it funds our operations. And if you subscribe, you can lock in 50% off right now on all future orders and cancel anytime. Take action now at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Become a subscriber and lock in 50% off on top of the already incredible savings. TheAlexJonesStore.com is the destination of health, liberty, and freedom.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
The age of sleep is over. The fourth turning is here, and nothing will stop this revolution. If I was the establishment, I'd get with the program and get back to being pro-human. Where evil is always there, but it's a neglected, controlled, suppressed thing, not put in the driver's seat. Roger Avery got interrupted when his Zoom cut out earlier. He was trying to get into predictive programming, why the movie Civil War made him so mad. But Stacey's joining us in 5 minutes. Let's do that then. We're finishing up a point about waking up to the Satanism. Please continue.
Well, I mentioned the Ridley Scott movie, The Last Duel. It's my favorite film of his recently.
Oh, I love that movie from three different perspectives.
Script, it's a Rashomon story, which is like the Japanese, the Kurosawa film Rashomon, where the same event is told from different perspectives.
That is his best film, not Alien, that movie, I watched that movie like eight times.
Look, I think that movie is this century. It's one of the best films of the century, and I think he kind of goes astray. I have not liked a lot of his movies, and I was going through and rewatching a bunch of his films, and I was not liking Napoleon, and I was not liking Exodus, and then all these movies I just wasn't connecting with, and then I had avoided The Last Duel. Mostly because I thought it was just going to be this sort of joke, and I love this time period. So I finally put it on, and I was blown away by it. Okay, so
The best part is it's true.
It's based on a book, and it's written by Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. And no matter what you think about those guys, they're smart guys.
Am I wrong, though? Isn't it based on a real story?
Yeah. Well, I think it's based on the last duel that was ever allowed within the feudal system in England at the time. But it's dramatized, of course. And okay, so I'm watching the movie and I had kind of stayed away from it because I saw Ben Affleck with the blonde hair and it looked like a joke. But then when I finally saw the movie's written by Ben and Matt, and they wrote it together, and inside of it is an understanding of how Hollywood works. And Hollywood, because it hasn't changed, Hollywood, like the court in The Last Duel, if you're not part of the orgy, you're not on the inside. It doesn't matter how true and noble you are as a soldier. It doesn't matter how pure you are. It doesn't matter how well you fight, even against unsurmountable odds. Like, because Matt Damon's character, who I really identified with, he at one point goes off to fight a war and they lose miserably. But it's not his fault necessarily. He is trying, he charges when nobody else will. He's a good leader and he really believes in it. But he's kind of he doesn't play the court thing very well. He's not fun. He's got a wife.
He won't be fake. Truly, he won't be fake. And it's almost like, not as good as this, but Ford versus Ferrari, another true story where the best driver is told to lose.
Yeah, exactly. And so basically what they're saying is, if you're not part of that orgy, if you're not like there with the prince or the king or whatever, sharing, you know, sex and entangling with each other, you know, on a bed, you're out. It doesn't matter who you are, how good you are. You're on the outside.
Exactly. And defeating enemies for France doesn't matter if you don't have an orgy.
Yeah, they're talking about power, and they're talking about what it really means to be in power. And it doesn't matter how true and noble he is, they take his land from him and they give it to the other guy. And it doesn't matter how good of a friend he is, because as I was watching it, I was thinking,
Then they take his wife.
Yeah, exactly. And I was thinking kind of like Adam Driver, kind of like.
But that's a repeat
business.
That's a repeat of Rollerball.
Oh, I love Rollerball. The Norman Jewison Rollerball, not so much
the old one, James Caan, where he's the top guy in the world, most popular, but the executive wants his wife, so he has to give him to her.
Yeah, and also he believes in the game, like just the way that I believe in film and movies as a kind of
stay right there. We got a growing stage. Let's talk about it. They want to steal our essence. They want to steal our art. They want to make us.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they want to steal your voice, is what they want to steal.
And with me, I learned they don't just censor you; they then misrepresent you. Once you're silenced, they create a counterfeit, and that is the worst part of it. Is there?
Yeah.
They create an avatar of you that's not you. We'll be right back in 60 seconds. Amazing. I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12th, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So we're selling 3 emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and 2 others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get 1 or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com, and I salute you for your support.
We now take you live to the Central Texas Command Center. In the heart of the resistance, rallying patriots worldwide. You're listening to the Alex Jones Show.
When they make a $300 million movie and release it during the election year 2024 called Civil War, based on leftist uprisings and killing a Trumpian figure, they're not doing it as a joke. When Obama produces a Netflix film, Leave the World Behind, what is the point of that? Roger Avery, one of the most respected writers, producers, and filmmakers in Hollywood, joining us today, taking it to the next level. What is predictive programming? Why did this film, Civil War, make you so upset?
Well, I mean, Leave the World Behind is another one where, this is our former president who is making a movie that is effectively advocating leaving the world behind. Okay, why is he making that? You know, what compels him to make that, to have the little girl in it say, "Daddy, I don't trust white people," and stuff like that? That's really putting something out there that people are going to listen to and pay attention to. And then I saw this movie, Civil War, and it really enraged me. It was everything that I was afraid that it was going to be, which made by a British guy of all things. And look, I like Alex's movie Ex Machina, and I admire him as a writer. He's done some work that really interests me. But if you want to make a movie, you know, about the collapse of everything, you know, go make a movie in England about the collapse of England and the shit that's going on there. You're like, do this, you know, and So I'm watching this film, and especially having Nick Offerman playing what I'm presuming is a kind of Trump stand-in, this kind of cartoon character of a president, you know, cartoon character playing a president, you know, and standing in for him, and then making this movie that does nothing but kind of visualize the collapse of the United States and this battle that takes place to, you know, and the ultimate statement being, you know, don't let them kill me. And that's enough for the journalist. And the idea that the journalists, who I think in this day and age are villains, the journalists are the heroes in this. And so everything about this movie was like a kind of program, a kind of statement. And I despise the film. And I looked at it and I thought, this movie is attempting to collapse our country. It's attempting to prepare everyone for this kind of, this vision to occur. And it, and Alex, I think, has said, well, it's, you know, I'm viewing everything from a neutral stance. And I didn't feel that at all. I felt that it was, an attempt to will it into being.
And lesser magic, which the Satanists do, they'll tell you, they show the thing in play before they do it. They believe it makes it happen, and it gives it more power once they do it. And then you have the Podesta plan that if Trump won, they would actually do this and have the military turn against Trump, but now they've tried it. It's not an endorsement of Trump. He's doing some things I don't like right now. The point is they are literally pre-programming this and admitting it.
Yeah, and they're willing it into happening, and they're showing everyone an example of what it would be. So that, again, the revelation of the method, you see what's there, and it makes it okay for it to happen. And it's a form of, also of predictive programming.
I do it too, he cut you off on another subject. Elaborate, because I've studied the Graham Grimoires, Black Magic, all that stuff to understand these people. They talk about, you have to show them, you have to tell them, that's metaphysical rule, it also gets them ready, and then it makes it even more powerful when you actually do it. And then you realize that they're doing this. Speak to that if you can.
Well, we live in a universe of mind, and the one thing I've started to realize is that these kind of forms of spells, this magic is real. When you believe something enough, you create a reality.
Yeah, we call it a spell. What it is a narrative to control your mind, and we can build incredible things. So it's a program.
It is a program. You select it, you project it, you expect it, and then you collect it. It's the spec method, and it actually works. And so people who are using it for, you know, there's good spells and bad spells, and there's spells that are promoting humanity, and then there's spells that are disintegrating humanity.
So we're talking about self-fulfilling prophecies.
When people are, doing sacrifice, whether it's human sacrifice or animal sacrifice, the reason they're doing it is because it works. And we see that it actually works inside of the Hollywood system, that it becomes supported. And whether that's just a corrupt system supporting the people that accept this kind of perspective, or whether it's actually altering the quantum reality as we know it, you know, that's debatable. But the fact is that it works.
And bottom line, it's a litmus test. Will you go against humanity? Will you do horrible things? It's a test.
And you know, Hollywood has been built on, you know, the bread and butter of Hollywood is built on wrath and revenge and stimulating these ideas inside of people.
Death wish.
And it was something that I believed in for, you know, a good portion of my youth, as I was trying to push the ceiling as an artist. And at a certain point, I started to realize it's, you know, you can make a movie about revenge and be a mediocre filmmaker, and people will say that you're a master because you're supporting that message. Okay, you try to make a movie about forgiveness, which is the opposite of wrath. Okay, that's really hard. Like, to really make a movie about forgiveness, if you do that, you're a master. And when I started watching,
so is that why The Passion of the Christ is so successful? We want movies about
that's one of the reasons The Passion of the Christ is absolutely so successful, is because and Mel Gibson is a master, because, you know, he's continuously tried to make these movies that, I mean, Passion of the Christ, it doesn't hold its punches back. It's like an Italian giallo movie. That movie is I had to turn from it at times, and I have a pretty high threshold. But, you know, it was ghastly watching
that film. Very gritty. Very, you could feel it.
You know, I started watching The Chosen, and, you know, I think The Chosen, this guy Dallas Jenkins, who directs every single episode, who has gone against the Pharisees of Hollywood and made it completely separate and done things that you're told you're not allowed to do, like directing every episode of a show. He has shepherded this story of the Gospels and told the story like the TV show Rome. He's told it from a very ground level perspective that, you know, so that we can identify with the characters.
So that's the same guy that made Rome?
No, it's like Rome, though, in that
Who's
Rome
the guy that made Rome?
Because
he came and visited me and wanted to make a film with me. Great guy. Who's the guy that made Rome? It was married to Sharon Stone. Doesn't matter. He's a great guy. Another guy.
Well, I mean, Milius was one of the progenitors of that project, so I consider it Milius. But I'm trying now to remember the name of the actual showrunner guy, but the thing about The Chosen is we kind of know where it's going. And he's making an episode about forgiveness essentially every week. And we've been able to watch him develop as a filmmaker. And I have the greatest admiration for this guy because he is truly a master of this kind of storytelling. And it is very, very difficult to do. Ridley Scott, one of the examples I used was the movie Revenant, which is about a man trapped in nature. He's isolated.
And it's a true story. Nature's trying to kill him. It's a true story.
Yeah, again, it's a true story. Nature is trying to kill him, and he's doing everything he can to get back to civilization, and he's doing it for revenge. Like, that's why he wants to go back. And this movie is very widely received, Academy Awards, blah, blah, blah. Okay, there was another movie that same year, directed by Ridley Scott, about a man isolated in nature. Nature is trying to kill him. He's trying to get back to civilization, and the reason he's trying to get back to civilization is forgiveness. And that movie was The Martian. Okay, that's a much harder movie to make, and it's also a much more difficult movie to accept because audiences, you know, the serotonin levels get easily stimulated by violent imagery, which is why we've seen television go from a place where you go to return to be comforted by characters that you love to television where we get you to love a character and then we mutilate them in horrible way. We vivisect their genitals on screen, and that makes you horrified, and you think you've seen something, you know, catastrophic, and I'm talking about Game of Thrones and Walking Dead.
Well, exactly. When you show humans something super violent, like take my grandfather, my dad's dad. Both my grandfathers were in the Army Air Corps, but he was a bunch of missions out of North Africa, and then Spain, and then Italy, and Germany. Volunteered a bunch. And then he was running like food canteens and stuff as an officer after that. But he would go to movies with my dad, and if there was any violence, he'd say, we're getting up, we're leaving. He liked to go watch like, you know, Dumbo and stuff. And it wasn't because he was a wimp. He'd seen so much blood and death. He took it like death isn't a joke. You can't turn it into entertainment. And what happens to our synapses is we see these simulated murders and death. It basically hits us. So we think we saw something powerful, but it's a cheap trick, I think is what you're saying, because it hits that level, but it wasn't to the higher, you know, levels of our consciousness. It hit us viscerally, so we think we just got a meal, but it's like cotton candy. It's actually poison.
Well, and by the way, there is death in Dumbo and in Bambi. You know, these movies, they dealt with loss and a significant loss, but in a human way. And the story of Christ, and the Gospels, as Dallas Jenkins is telling it, is leading to this moment, this horrifying moment. And as you've come to love the characters, you start realizing what's coming and how
it creates
and how
that real empathy.
You have to earn that. Have to earn that. And I feel like just pushing serotonin levels for the sake of doing it, which I've done as a filmmaker. And I'm not necessarily entirely proud of it.
But what you're saying, it's the easy path. It works, but it literally, art controls society. You keep doing this, you get Satanism, because that's where this goes.
And it's one of the reasons I admire Linkletter so much, is because he seems to be somewhat separate from that and immune from that. He approaches movies from a humanist point of perspective and point of view. And
yeah, when I was growing up, I got mad at musicals and love stories and comedies that they were wimpy, because I was all about the serotonin. As I've gotten older, I'm like, oh, I want that. I want a refuge. I want to be happy.
And in truth, it's not bad to have a balance in cinema, but something has happened along the way where the scales have tilted. And I now realize that if you want to be a groundbreaking filmmaker, if you want to push the ceiling, you've got to push the ceiling of forgiveness. You've got to preach forgiveness and
love. We've hit the maximum of torture and death and hostile and, you know, all that stuff, now it's the other way. It's what you're saying, the revolution.
It's numbing people. It's numbed us to those horrors of life. And simultaneously, we're receiving these kind of, predictive programming messages, which seem to be supportive of it. And simple-minded, you know, monkey see, monkey do people will immediately follow that. You know, you put the message out there to somebody to behave a certain way, they will behave that way. Somebody will. And I just now realize as a filmmaker, and it's caused me to have a little bit of a loss of standing in the Hollywood system. I no longer have an agent, for example. I'm no longer a member of the Academy.
But that's a good thing, because the Hollywood has collapsed. So there's a whole new system forming.
Yeah. It's, truly a whole new system. I mean, the paradigm has shifted, and we're moving into individuals able to produce at a very high scale. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about AI and
people are afraid of AI. Yeah, well, obviously, I've never used the tool. A gun's good for good or good for bad. But obviously, we use AI here. AI for independent groups, what is the good side of AI? You've talked about that, AI filmmaking.
Well, the good side of it is that it's going to democratize the filmmaking process, so that the individual can now make, it's always going to be
a writer's vision and literally do something that would cost $100 million.
Yeah, and I think what this is going to do is it's going to not remove the artists from the equation, because I've started an AI company, it's a technology company, and what I'm realizing is you still need artists. What it's going to get rid of is the gatekeepers, the velvet rope people, the cock blockers, so to speak. Those people are going to lose their jobs. The executives who really perform nothing other than to say no to everybody, they're going to lose their jobs, because they operate out of fear and they're parasites. And
exactly.
I feel like they
thought the internet would suppress and enslave us all, it's backfired on them. Just like they thought.
Correct. You know, people, to be afraid of AI is to sort of like to be afraid of digital video when it first came out. And what I recall.
No, I agree. Listeners have asked me, like, why do I say embrace it, take it over? I want distributed. I want 1,000, 1,000,000 AIs. What I want to stop is centralized, which we know they've been trying to do. We need Wild Wild West.
Well, and we're getting there. The new AI models are, I mean, there's technology breakthroughs that are allowing the kind of generative video that we see at the highest level that will be able to be done on your laptop computer. And so what it is it just means that as a filmmaker and as an artist, as a cineast, you'll be able to visualize whatever is in your head and put it on screen. You know, in the early days of computer graphics, people were wild with computer graphics, and they did all sorts of crazy stuff that they were showing off. Eventually it calmed down and it balanced out, and we started seeing guys like, you know, I think Zemeckis is an outstanding filmmaker, and he was largely using it in an invisible way where you didn't even know that you were seeing, something that was
a tool. And it's how we approach it. They want to tell us it's scary and totalitarian because they mean it for that aim. They don't want us to go pick up the Promethean fire ourselves.
Exactly. And, you know, at the end of the day, it is always about the artist. You know, I watch Star Trek a lot, and they have a holodeck on there, and the holodeck is run by a computer, and it's got computer-generated characters that appear to talk on their own. But in that world, in that paradigm, they still have holo novelists who are effectively in control of the narrative that's being told on the holodeck. And, I've noticed that most technology seems to be copying what we see in movies, just like predictive programming. You know, the iPhone, that was on Star Trek. The computer talking back to us, that was on Star Trek. Because we see that and we're like, I want that. And then some clever guy or girl figures out how to make it.
Just like Genesis tells us, we're not God. We're made in the image of God, who is a creator. Which people try to say AI is superior. We built it. No, we have to realize how amazing we are.
And, you know, people talk about, you know, is it a demon? Well, angels and demons are the same. And, you know, it's they whisper into the ears of men, and we either listen or we don't. And we either take the advice or we don't. We have the power of choice granted to us by God. And we don't have to listen to the evil that's whispered into our ears. We can listen to the good instead. And that just means that AI will be whatever it is that you create out of it. The world is whatever you create out of it. It's what we visualize to be true and real.
Let me ask you this question. You have narcissists. Loves himself. He's beautiful. He's looking in the pool. He falls in the water and drowns. I look at AI. It's just showing us our some work. But because our cerebral cortex can't focus on the trillions of pieces, or we go crazy. But AI does show us the subconscious, really the unconscious. It hallucinates. But so much what I see from AI is dreams I already had. So we're really looking at a mirror of our own collective unconsciousness here. And like you said, how we program it is the way it goes. And the way they program it, OpenAI, Sam Altman, all of them, to lie, then hallucinates and fails. With Grok, it's like three times better not hallucinating or failing, because it's been trained, at least on the surface, to tell the truth. And I've said that myself. I was never a huge liar, but I've, you know, lie about certain things, obviously. But I've learned when I don't lie or even think about what I'm about to say, just say what I really know is true. The brain works quicker because it's not doing calculations or hallucinations of worrying what I'm about to say or how it'll affect people or let me be politically correct. The more I just say what I want, it just gets better and better. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I worked in VR for a while, and I did a number of tests in VR in the early days, and I was writing white papers on it for a virtual reality company. And what I recognized was that when people put these goggles on for the first time, the first thing they would do is look around. And what it did was it was returning them to like baby brain, where you're seeing the world for the first time and you're exploring the world for the first time. And it takes you back to a very vulnerable place that is still within all of us. And this baby brain part is vulnerable. And I started recognizing that the first thing people were making with VR, and this is probably one of the things that started triggering my recent way of thinking, was they were immediately trying to do shock horror inside of this virtual reality environment. And I started thinking how dangerous it was and how effective it is because of where the medium is taking your perception to, which is this protected child within you. And
because that's how a baby sees it, is it very exactly
it with horror.
When you said that, it totally clicked. Sorry to interrupt. I was wondering, what's the look of people that first put on VR? When you said it clicked, that's what a baby does. Exactly.
Yeah, you're examining the world for the first time, and you're seeing things for the first time. And what it's doing is, you know, the medium is the message largely. That's, they don't just say that. It's true. The medium has an effect on your physiology and how you take in, you know, movies. You know, when you watch a film, for example, projected on film, you're watching 24 frames, which are still images every second. And your brain is looking effectively at still images. And then you're using the persistence of vision to stitch those still images together to create the illusion of motion. And this activates beta cycles in your brain. Whereas video was using refresh rates and scan lines, and this activated alpha cycles in your brain, which is why people were able to absorb hours and hours of television very easily, whereas you get exhausted in a movie after 90 or 100
exactly.
minutes. Exactly. And it's because physiologically,
it makes it more intense, like a struggle. Exactly. That's why film is so much more powerful, because it's a struggle.
Yeah, exactly. You're an active participant in it. And so VR being its own kind of new medium was taking people back to this kind of protected baby brain space that is inside of all of us and affecting us. And by immediately throwing horror in, because horror is easy to do, we know that. It's shocking.
It activates the crocodile brain.
Yeah, it damages your inner child. And so I started realizing this, and that was when people didn't want to read my white paper anymore in VR, because it wasn't necessarily what they wanted to hear. So, we have to be careful with how we assimilate the world around us. I mean, we have layers of abstraction of what is real, and they're, you know, just without movies, just looking at the world, there's a number of layers of abstraction of, you know, there's the light as it travels in through your eyes. There's, you know, the cornea and the lens and all of the cones and rods that take in that light and process it into information. And then even then there are layers inside of our brain on how we perceive what is real. You start adding movies on top of that, and you're starting to affect what reality is and how
incredible.
We assimilate
Roger
reality.
Avery, stay there. One more segment. I want to get into the rights return or attempt return to Hollywood, Where Hollywood Goes, and other films, and Body Snatchers. You mentioned on Joe Rogan.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
Introducing Ultra DNA Revival, the advanced daily supplement designed to help you feel and perform at your absolute best, starting at the cellular level. Backed by cutting-edge mitochondrial and DNA support science, Ultra DNA Revival delivers noticeable all-day energy without stimulants or crashes, faster recovery and greater endurance, sharper focus and mental clarity, support for healthy blood sugar levels, stronger immune system function, enhanced liver health and natural detoxification, reduces everyday stress and anxiety, protection against oxidative stress, and the visible signs of aging. And again, this is a private label of an already best-selling brand that found this. Thousands of customers report feeling the difference in as little as 7 to 14 days. Right now, take advantage of our best pricing ever. VFM members, $34.95. Regular, $59.59. Save over 40% with a VFM membership for $30 a month. Experience the revival your body has been waiting for. Secure your DNA revival today at TheAlexJonesStore.com.
I am making this historic announcement on Friday, December 12th, 2025. The future of InfoWars hangs in the balance. It is in your hands. They're having a state auction in January next year in about a month, but we don't even have the money for payroll or for satellites or for bandwidth. We've got this next shot to survive, but if we don't get the funds in, we shut down. So, we're selling 3 emergency limited edition posters at InfoWarsStore.com right now that are critical to us staying on the air. I want to encourage you to go now to get I Have Not Yet Begun to Fight, John Paul Jones poster, and 2 others, Make No Peace with Evil and Defend the West, Iconic Crusades. Go now to InfoWarsStore.com to get 1 or more of these iconic posters, limited edition. We cannot do it without you. I have fired the bat signal. Take action now if you want to stand with us in this fight at InfoWarsStore.com. And I salute you for your support. The end of the old order is coming. There's a lot of jockeying by some of the same power groups to be in control in the future. But you still got the central banks. You still got the big panopticon, AI, surveillance systems, all the big tech is. And they're still going to try to stay in control. But because they're exposed, it's going to get harder.
I'd like to have guys for now.
And harder and harder. I haven't plugged yet today because the news has been so incredibly hardcore. But the products really are amazing, and that's how we fund our operations. So I need your support. We have a flash weekend sale. today through Monday, March 9th, 50% off methylene blue capsules. It's the very same high-quality methylene blue that's in the tincture. 50% off that when you buy Ultra Methylene Blue tincture. Again, the pills are great for travel. It's the best methylene blue out there. You really owe it to yourself. Tommy Robbins was blown away by it yesterday here in studio. And we have the March Mega Sale, 40% off on NAD, Ultimate Burn, Life Force CMOS, Methylene Blue tincture, and more. Take advantage of that right now at TheAlexHomeStore.com.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Waging war on corruption, it's Alex Jones. Coming to you live from the front lines of the InfoWar.
So one of the most successful avant-garde writers, directors, producers, Roger Avery, is our guest for another 20 minutes or so. And I noticed when he was on Joe Rogan, he mentioned body snatchers. And I've used that analogy many times. Back a month ago when the black guys in the airport saying, why don't you care? You're looking at your phones. Wake up! You're in danger! And he's absolutely right. Yeah. We have to have, you know, that sense of urgency. Here's a clip from the remake in the 70s when the original guy from the 60s or 50s, whenever the first body snatchers was made, running around as society's collapsing, as the aliens are really in their takeover phase. Here it is.
Okay. Well, Kibner will be able to explain something.
I don't need a psychiatrist.
Just forget that he's a psychiatrist. Just think of him as a very intelligent man, which is what he is. It's a book party. He's a celebrity. He's very famous, and you will really like him if you just forget that you think he's a psychiatrist.
I don't know. Matthew, I've lived in this city all my life, but somehow today I felt everything had changed. People were different. Not just Jeffrey, but everybody. Yesterday it all seemed normal. Today everything seemed the same, but it wasn't. It was a nightmare. It really became frightening. It was like the whole city had changed overnight.
Did I ever tell you the one about the English Camel Corps? Did I?
Mm-mm.
They're trapped in the desert, in the Sahara Desert. They've been surrounded by Rommel for 40 days, and they've run out of food. And the captain comes and makes an announcement to the men. And he says, "Men, I have some good news for you and some bad news for you." And one of the men says...
Oh, wait, you have told me this one.
Oh. Can I tell it to you again?
Sure.
No. Lock the door.
They're coming. They're coming. Help. Help. They're coming. They're coming. Listen to me. Listen. Help me. Euronext, please. Please. Euronext, we're in danger. Please, listen to me. Something terrible. Please. Euronext, here they are. They're already here. Come. Euronext. They're coming. They're coming.
Must have done something.
And that's where we are, and that's what I'm trying to do, Roger Avery's trying to do, is we don't claim to have all the answers, but we know we're not in Kansas anymore. Roger, you brought up body snatchers. Why did you raise that on Rogan?
Well, there was this guy I'd seen on X who, this well-dressed black dude who was at the Atlanta airport, and he had read basically what I had read, and he was out there, and he couldn't believe everyone was asleep and just going about their daily lives, just like Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And he was like Kevin McCarthy, the actor from the original movie who was reprising that final moment of the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers in Philip Kaufman's remake in the 1970s. And I think it's the 1970s. And, where he was in the airport just saying, you know, you don't know what's happening there. He's telling them they're eating babies. The horrors that are going on, and he's trying to shake everyone out of it, and people are videotaping him, and people are standing back, and people are kind of laughing, you know, off to the side, and nobody actually wants to admit it. And I watched that and in kind of horror, and I was thinking, here he is. That guy's like me. I know I know what he's going through because
I do it all the time. Sometimes I start screaming in airports and grocery stores saying it. Like during the lockdown, yeah, like take your mask off. It's asleep. All a lie. Yeah.
And it reminded me of a Latin phrase that has, you know, been long known because it's true, which is mundus vult decipi ergo decipiatur. Mundus vult decipi, the world wants to be deceived. Ergo decipiatur, therefore it is deceived. And it's because we don't want to believe, you know, when you know the realities of the world, it's like you've bitten from the fruit of knowledge. And, you know, you can no longer be innocent again. You will never be the same once you know what's, you know, what the reality is of the world. You are no longer in the garden. You're no longer like, you know, an animal, which animals may kill, but they're innocent because they're, you know, they don't have knowledge the way we do. And so you're expelled from the garden, but people want to believe that they're still in the garden. They will lie to themselves just to believe that they're still
exactly.
innocent.
That's the worst place. We're not in the garden and they don't even know it. So we're kind of giving them the second bite at the apple. Like you're already in Sin City, baby. You need to now admit it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and if the garden is too much for some people to accept, one can always use Plato's cave as an example, that you're in Plato's cave, you're looking at shadows on the wall, or this guy from The Matrix who knows that he's, that, you know, that the steak is fake, but that, you know, if he, but it still tastes good. And he would rather be ignorant because what Orwell said was ignorance is bliss. And there comes a point where if you've undergone gnosis, if you have a, you know, an understanding of things and you've read the papers and you see the horrors that are behind the veil that are no longer hidden because there's, you know, and they show these things during Olympic ceremonies now. They show us, you know, I think it was it 2016 in the Olympics? They showed us the coming of COVID because these are, plans. They're thinking about these plans three steps ahead of everyone. And so, you know, when I heard that, that it wasn't Iran that announced that there was going to be an attack on Los Angeles, it was the FBI that announced the attack on Los Angeles. Haven't heard anything from Iran about it. And so I started immediately thinking, well, this is going to be like Lahaina, or this is going to be like, the Pacific Palisades. Why would they do this? Why would they do this at an Olympic ceremony if not
killing everyone?
If not part of a spell that they're casting. And so, when I heard about the attacks, which are ludicrous, the idea that Iran is going to attack California, it's as ludicrous as the movie 1941, by Spielberg. You know, it's a joke. What makes a lot more sense is that somebody wants to do a land grab, or somebody wants to destroy their building for insurance purposes, or somebody wants to create chaos in order to enact something else because they're thinking three steps ahead. We're only thinking one step ahead because most of us are just trying to get through our lives. We're just trying to pay our mortgage.
We won't think like administrators, like have all this control of narrative, of property, and even admit they're going to do stuff like this. We have to stop being naive and start thinking like they do.
Yeah, and the thing is, the messaging is all out there all along. You can see it because of the revelation of the method. They have to tell you in advance as part of the karmic relief. Like, so.
Explain that. You know the esoteric. You were laying that on a rug. It was fascinating. Why do they have to tell you what's happening?
Well, the revelation of the method is to expose what you're going to do before you do it. And by doing that, it becomes accepted, you know, by the people. Before you do it, and then once you do it, you are relieved of the karmic weight that comes with actions of negativity. And so this is something that dates back is to the dawn of time, and you know, that has existed for a very, very long time. And you know, it's in all, you know, it's in the books. You can read these esoteric texts that are effectively describing how the nature of reality works. I mean, people sometimes are like, wow, that's a coincidence, or wow, I see patterns in everything. I see patterns in the world
around. So it's contracting. If they tell you, you've agreed if you don't oppose it, so you can waive your rights in a contract.
Correct. Correct. It's like a vampire asking to be invited into the home. Once you invite it into your house, you've made it okay. Whatever happens to you after that, it's your own damn fault. And so we as a culture, mostly asleep, are being fed these kind of images constantly, either through movies or through, you know, Olympic ceremonies. And you just have to ask, like, who is running the Olympics?
Yeah, like, why every NFL thing, every Hollywood event, it's devil worship, it's a cult, all seeing eyes, portals. What are they saying?
I'm sorry, say that again.
We know they're doing it. When you see occult ceremonies are almost in every major event, what is it? Obviously, it's about the revelation of method, but what are they telling us through the ceremonies?
Well, they're telling us what they're going to do. And you can see what they're going to do. If they're going to, like, for instance,
cut the head off the queen, they're saying revolution. But they don't mean revolution.
They're saying revolution. And, you know, and they're soft implying it's a kind of soft power that puts it in. If you show, the Last Supper, which is the version of it, you show the Last Supper.
Yes.
And you pervert it and you invert it.
You own it.
Then you're creating an inversion of reality. And, you know,
and
just
stealing
like
femininity with gross men with beards dressed as women and going in and making women nurses do pap smears on men's penises. It's all about occult ritual to make you submit to lies.
It's all about as above, so below. And when we read the Hermetic laws, the laws of Hermes Trismegistus, you know, these laws are the laws by which, you know, most lawyers operate under. And so when you see like the laws of correspondence, that, you know, that which is above is also so below. What they're trying to do is, I don't know if you've ever read any of, Rabbi Zavatai Levi's works. Their whole thing is to bring about the apocalypse sooner. Like, and so
acceleration, explain what that rabbi said. That's important.
Zavatai Levi effectively said that, if we bring about, through sin and through acts of sin, we bring about, you know, the apocalypse sooner, and therefore we become closer to the end times and the coming of the Messiah, or whatever he called the Messiah. And so there was this kind of belief that,
forcing God's hand, which we have Hegseth, little fan of the Iranians, like, we're going to force the end of the world here. And then meanwhile, the Iranians think their 12th Mahdi is about to come, the same thing.
In Marlowe's Faust, there's a moment where Faustus, you know, creates a circle, a magic circle to protect him. And then he conjures Mephistopheles using a certain spell. And Mephistopheles comes to him from, you know, presumably from hell and before Faust. And Faust asks him as one of the questions, now that he has the demon before him, he says, if you're truly a demon and you are condemned to hell, how is it now that you are here before me? You know, if God has condemned you. And what Mephistopheles says, why Faust, this is hell, nor am I out of it. Think you that I, who have seen the face of God and known the gifts of heaven, am condemned to 10,000 hells to be deprived of it? And what Marlowe is saying is that we are in hell. You know, the material realm is the trap. And what we're undergoing now is a kind of battle between spiritualism to ascend and materialism, which is to descend. And, this is a wonderful version of, Faust was written by Goethe and Marlowe. They both did versions of it. And, this filmmaker, whose name just escapes me. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he's an animator and he combined Goethe and Marlowe very elegantly. And,
the crazy part is Faust could have gotten out of it any time. It didn't.
Yeah, well, the crazy part is that Faust is given everything that he asks for because he doesn't believe the mortal soul is anything. It's just a thought, you know, this trifle of a mortal soul that you speak of. I gladly give it up to be able to move the spheres from their orbits, to look behind the veil of reality, to know the secrets of the universe. And once the entire story is done, Mephistopheles comes to claim his soul from him, and he says, yeah, but I don't know any more than I did at the beginning. You know, I've seen everything. I've seen behind the veil. I've been able to move the spheres and change reality and do all the worldly manipulations possible. I've had all the powers. I've raised the seas. I've lowered the seas. I've done it all, and I still don't know, you know, the truth of things. And the devil says, or Mephistopheles, the devil says, why, Faust, all the secrets of the universe were there for you all along in a single blade of grass. And what they're saying is God and God's method is here. And it's for us to choose. It's for us to choose the beauty of this reality that we're in over the we are in equal parts hell and heaven simultaneously.
And isn't that the paradox that God gave us free will, gives us a cheat sheet, but the devil is an agent of God. The devil decided to rebel, but God allows the devil to do this. People need to understand that. The Satanists always come back with that. Oh, your God's a Satanist. He allows this to happen. No, he gave us free will. And it's just like, I have children. They could be bank robbers or be great people. It's the same process.
Angels and demons. I went to CERN, and at CERN, they gave me a private tour, and they took me in. You know, they took me into the antimatter chamber. They did all sorts of stuff. And there at CERN, they have stuffed animals of the Tasmanian devil. They have a giant A on the wall with an arrow going one way, and a D on the wall going the other way. And I was like, "What's that?" And they said, "Oh, that's angels and demons." And so, you know, CERN, when you look at it, you're like, "What is that?" It looks like a giant, cathode ray tube to me. It looks like a projector. It looks like they're projecting television that they're trying. And there's Kali the Destroyer, Kali Yuga the Destroyer, which is, a sculpture that they have at CERN. And, there's been ceremonies there over it and, at that sculpture. There it is. And what exactly are they doing? And, this is where the World Wide Web was invented. This is where large advances in AI came from. This is one of the few places on the planet that is completely multinational. You know, like while I was there, and this is a while ago, there were Iranian scientists, Russian scientists, scientists from all over the world. And it's an extra, even though it crosses, I think, three separate countries, you do not need passport. The passports are extra judicial. I think that's the term that they used. And so
it's like a city state, like the city of London or Israel or the Vatican. It's its own thing.
And they're trying, or they have succeeded in effectively projecting reality. And you look at that logo that you just had up is three sixes. It's 666. Is that an accident? Who designed that? Is that just because the colliders, take the spin rates like that? Or is it because that's a 666 that we're looking at?
And what is 666 from your research?
Well, 666 is the number of the beast. But then again, that is the revelation of the method. By showing us what it is, and we all agree with it, it is now part of something that we're all paying for and that we've all, that we're all aiding in.
And just like they're all representatives of every country there, like you're all involved.
Yeah, because there are no real countries. That's the other thing that I've started to realize is that just like in Hollywood, there are no multiple studios. It's all run by one giant group. And whatever we call that group, whether it's an agreement among these giant corporations or whether it's BlackRock, State Street, Vanguard all working in concert, to basically send messaging from above, to the development executives who all will follow. They listen to their bosses.
Oh, we know that. That's come out with the ESG. So in closing, an incredible interview. What other points you'd like to make?
Nothing happens without being sanctioned first and without us being told what's about to happen. And so just be aware of what you're watching and why you're watching it.
Absolutely. What is going to happen to Hollywood? What's happening to it right now?
Well, there's a struggle right now between we could call it the well-meaning right, and we could also call it the well-meaning left. But both of them have rather extreme ideologies. And I've always kind of felt that you need to know your extremes in order to find your center, and that you choose, just like you choose between good and evil, you know, constantly. I mean, my kind of discovery was that the well-meaning right can just as easily fall prey to the trappings of what Hollywood is. And, you know, for example, this dinner that I was at, you know, they were asking, what can we do? How do we do it? What do we do about the American cinematic universe? And, you know, the answers from most of the guys there were, well, you make 10 movies and one of them is a hit. In the end, they're all chasing money. And that is the problem, because money is not real. Money is a concept. Like they say, our planet is in debt, you know, trillions of dollars in debt. In debt to who? And when you read Milton Friedman's dissertation, which is The Island of Stone Money, about the Isle of Yap, and how they used these stone fays, which are like donuts, basically, of different sizes, that their concept of money was these rocks. And so in order to get anything done, the Germans at the time, when they were trying to build an airstrip, they encountered these people and they're like, how do we get them to do, you know, what we want them to do? And they offered money, but the money was, they just burned the money. They didn't care about Reichsmarks. And so instead they would, they marked up all of the fay, these stones that were laying around the island. And they said, the ones that are marked belong to the Kaiser now. And unless you build that road, I'm not going to take the mark off of it. And the road got built. And so money is a kind of confidence thing. It's a kind of belief system. It's a faith. And you either believe in the faith of that, or you believe in the faith of your own spiritualism and those messages that come from within. And I think that we all now must make a choice. And the choice is between materialism or spiritualism.
I totally agree. Does Hollywood know?
Those times are here.
Does Hollywood know effectively, in my view, that it's basically the old system's dead? Or are they zombies?
I think in some kind of unconscious level, the old system is dead. And what's really happened is you have a number of executives who are being paid $600,000 a year, and they're very comfortable in their job, and they will not make a choice. Like, you come in and you pitch something, they would rather say no to everything than to say yes to something and maybe be wrong. And the ratio is about 10 to 1.
So they're totally stagnant.
And so they're frozen. They're like a deer in the headlights, and nothing gets done that way, which is why it's up to individuals now to pick up the torch and say, I can make a movie. And by the way, I meet young filmmakers who make movies for $50,000. And, you know, they have figured out how to release these movies in such a way that they see consistent return on their investment, and they own their material.
So the 100%. System committed suicide itself. It doesn't know it yet, but the innovation is there. You're seeing a renaissance begin.
Absolutely. I think that there's a renaissance coming. I think everything moves in ebbs and flows. And whenever there's a crisis, inside of the Chinese word for crisis is the Chinese character for opportunity.
Absolutely.
And this is a great opportunity for us to put out the right kinds of films and the right kinds of messaging, to preach the right ethics and morals to the people who just want to go to be entertained.
Exactly. The elites need to know their Satanism is going to destroy everybody. They need to turn back now. Roger Avery, I'm going to end the broadcast with a plug. If you want to hold just 1 minute, I'll say bye to you at the end. Please, I want to talk to you too. So please don't hang up. I'm going to end in 1 minute. Thank you so much. And just an amazing interview. People can find you at Avery.com and at Avery on X. Thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure. I really appreciate you having me on your show. Thank you so much.
Amazing. Just hold a minute and a half, because I want to say bye to you before Harrison Smith takes over with the war room today. I'm not funded by the Qataris, the Israelis, or Hollywood, or anybody. I'm funded by you. So this whole operation, everything we do, is funded by you at theoliveshowstore.com. We got a big sale that just launched. It only runs till Monday. You can text InfoWars. People have been wanting this. We have it now. Text InfoWars 342581 and get a free bottle of methylene blue tincture with any purchase. So you can buy like a $14 t-shirt and get a free bottle of methylene blue, $35 value. That is an amazing deal. It's a loss leader. The product's so good, we're doing this. Text InfoWars 342581. Also, We have the original X2 iodine, the very best, pure iodine. Nobody else has it. Even stronger, now known as T3 at thealexjonesstore.com. 50% off for VIP members, 25% off for everyone else. And we have the America 250-year birthday T-shirt, limited edition, at cost, $14.99 at the store right now, limited edition shirt. And we also have the Mega March sale ending the 17th, 40% off everything else. Thealexjonesstore.com. That's what changes the world. Products that make you healthier, wealthier, wiser, and to fund the operation. I want to thank you all for your support and encourage those that haven't been visiting the site to do it now. Amazing interview with Roger Avery. Incredible stuff. We'll be right back with the next broadcast with Harrison Smith and the War Room.
RFK Jr. shocked many when he sat down for a meal with Fox's Sean Hannity. The pair dined at fast food chain Steak and Shake, eating burgers and fries in a bid to highlight the chain's switch to frying their food in beef tallow, which is a healthier alternative to traditionally used seed oils.
I am so excited. After over a year, we have the highest quality private labeled beef tallow out there. You've heard RFK Jr. rave about it, the health effects, how good it is. This sucker is boom heavy. This is high quality. It is very competitively priced, and it funds this whole operation. It is optimal human beef tallow, grass-fed from thealexjonesstore.com. It is night and day compared to all these other fats and all these trans fats and all of the seed oils that are so toxic, especially when you heat them. Not this. It is so good. It is now available, discounted, at thealexjonesstore.com.
Hey, the Alex Jones app, AJN Live, is now the number one app in the world. That's right, you heard me. We're number one. And this is pissing off the Democrats in the deep state big time. They're doing everything they can to shut us down, and now here we are, dominating the Apple Store.
Smells like victory.
We just launched the app less than 2 days ago, and we're already the number one news app in the world. And we'd like to keep it that way, so if you haven't done so yet, now's your chance. Go to alexjonesapp.com and download the app and tell the globalists to go f*** themselves.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.